And welcome to Dark Guidance. I'm Chris.
I'm Brian.
I'm Jack.
And today we've got... today we're going to talk about basically... been making waves recently, now that their CID has come to fruition. And we've seen some terrible, terrible models become not so terrible. Or perhaps terrible in a different way. We are talking about the Protectorate of Menoth.
No. The Protectorate of Judicator.
Judicators of Menoth. There we go. So, obviously, Menoth is a faction that I find incredibly boring to build lists for. Like, it strains the mind. So I've decided to bring along Jack, who, while not quite so boring, is capable of enduring boredom to a better degree than I am to make lists.
I mean, I like big numbers, so...
But yeah. What about inaccurate? Doesn't that ruin your big numbers?
No, because you get a big number.
Yeah, your number is so big it trumps inaccurate. So like with most faction cards we do, we'll probably go through the themes, and then we'll go through the themes first rather briefly in this case, because realistically speaking, there's going to be a lot of overlap with the casters, which we'll talk about. We'll do it slightly differently, because Jack's happily graded them into various tiers. I believe the tiers are almost playable, not playable, and like, seriously, don't play these at all, burn these casters immediately.
I never said anything of the sort.
I'm paraphrasing for you. It's fine.
However, Chris is in reading between the lines and interpreting what I wrote. So take it however you wish. They are in three categories. Some may or may not be playable, but we'll get to that when we talk about the casters. So the first one we're going to go through is the theme list. So there are four theme or tier lists, whatever you want to call it these days, for Protectorate. You've got Guardians of the Temple, you've got Creator's Might, you've got Exemplar Interdiction, and Faithful Masses. All four of these themes are playable. And I'm just going to talk briefly about which ones I like at the moment and which ones I don't like. So to get out of the way, I don't like Creator's Might right now, and that's mostly because of the way scenario works in Steamroller. And it's an issue that is not unique to Creator's Might. A lot of Beast themes or Warjack themes have a problem of, you know, building a list where you get enough free points, get enough work into the list, but still are able to not lose on scenario.
Indeed.
I think the biggest defender is probably Heavy Metal.
So. Yeah. Go.
All right, so Creator's Might, if you compare it to Heavy Metal, they're both Warjack themes. Heavy Metal has the advantage of having access to better range Warjacks. Creator's Might doesn't really have that option. So basically when you're playing Creator's Might, you're trying to leverage numbers. You want to take as many cheap Warjacks as possible because the Protectorate shooting outside of the Judicator isn't very good, to be honest.
It's a bit janky. Like, the Redeemer is quite acceptable if you can get its numbers high enough, but otherwise it's not great.
Yeah, you can get some shooting, but it's just more effort than it's worth.
I will say one thing with Creator's Might is you have access to Warders, which are actually quite exceptional as scenario random pieces.
Yes.
Whether they can carry a list of its own, that's very different. But it was something I noticed. Like, the biggest list I've seen with Creator's Might is the obvious usual expediter of, like, why take one Judicator when you can take two? But a very common problem with those lists, and one of the reasons why I think, in general, it's just not a great list, is you just lose on scenario.
It's the problem with a lot of Jack lists these days.
Yeah. And
in my opinion, there's really only two ways or reasons to play Creator's Might. The first one is you want to run a double Judicator list, and you want to get some free points out of those Judicators. That's the first one. And we'll talk about some casters that might want to do that later. And the second reason you want to play it is if you're playing Amon, because he's not interested in infantry. He just wants, like, you know, as many Crusaders or whatever Jack you feel like putting into the list as possible.
Dervishes.
So those are the main reasons. It's not an unplayable theme list, it's just very narrow and has some issues in Steamroller at the moment.
Cool. Alright, so I want you to talk about Guardians of the Temple, because I want to cross that one off rather quickly.
Alright, so Guardians of the Temple is an interesting one. We might have to talk about this in the future a bit more, but my issue with Guardians of the Temple, having thought about it again recently, is that its issue is that it doesn't quite have enough options in it at the moment. So what I mean by that is, yes, it has some reasonable units, but the solos that you can take are really just two. You can take Nicaea and you can take Pyrus. That's pretty much it. So for example, if you get to 60 points of Flame Guard and you get Nicaea, you get Pyrus, then you have to take a third free solo or attachment.
It was really a vassal, have... a rack, a reclaimer.
Yeah, they're all terrible in the theme. All those the reclaimer, vassal, rack. You're not gonna take a vassal because it's a 1 point solo, right? That's terrible. You're not gonna take a rack as a 1 point solo. You don't want to take a reclaimer because it kind of just does nothing. And the vassal or menop also does nothing because you're not a warjack theme. So really, your option is temple flame guard unit attachment, which itself isn't great because you're paying 4 points for like one model that can make attacks when the whole unit only costs 11. So I mean. Yeah, so the theme I actually think is not bad because it gives something that Protectorate doesn't have access to in the other themes, which is fast models with stealth, with ambush if you want.
Yeah, and so sticky models as well. Well, actually, that's not really true because Menoth have a lot of sticky models.
Menoth have some of the best sticky models.
Yeah, but this one is a army-wide stickiness, so to speak. Like this is.
I don't know if stickiness is the right term. It's a bit weird. So Menoth has a lot of survivable models. They have a lot of the models that hit hard and counter punch and can take a punch. Guardian Zemple is completely opposite. So Guardian Zemple is like, I'm going to be near your AD line, top, you know, bottom of one or top of one, whatever you want, turn one. And most Menoth this do the opposite. They just walk up, or not quite to the halfway line, and then either, you know, do a bit of shooting or take the alpha or, you know, threaten scenario. Which is fine. This list doesn't hit super hard, but it does let you play a very fast and narrow game. So if you get something like Spread the Net or you get Mirage, you know, you can have ambushing Daunters on the side, you can have Daunters coming down the middle with stealth. You can have Temple Flame Guard, which are really cheap and have tough and no knockdown, which are kind of annoying to remove. And then you have obviously Daughter Cab, which have Pathfinder and like really fast. So it's something that people don't list build for when they play against Protectorate. They think, oh yeah, all I need to deal with is bunch of warjacks if they're playing Amon, a bunch of weapon masters that are blessed and Exemplar and Adjudicator, you know, stuff like that. But then, let's just say you have a lot of hard-hitting models with quality attacks, and then you run into a bunch of, you know, Temple Flame Guard that are worth like 1 point each, that have tough no knockdown, some Daughters which are stealth, which you probably can't shoot, and some Cab on the Flames. It's not comfortable. So it gives something that Protector doesn't have access to, and it's particularly good in some matchups where Warjacks are not good, you know, examples are not good, which, to be honest, isn't too many. But, for example, if you play against Retribution, and they happen to have, you know, Sirius, anything in Shadows, you might want to have a look at this theme, is all I'm going to say.
Fair enough. We'll go next into Faithful Masses, I guess, because we'll end up on Exemplar, because I think they're the one that's
going to Yeah, we'll end up on Exemplar. So Faithful Masses is a theme which I've hated for a long time. It's not bad, I just hate it. And part of the reason I hate it...
Racist.
Say that for the premium content.
Alright.
I hate Faithful Masses because I hate Idrid, to be honest. And that's not because of the color of the skin, alright?
Oh my god.
I hate Idrid because they're expensive fragile infantry, which are short range. In optimally, like, if everything goes right and they get to do, you know, they get to shoot their prey or they get to charge their prey and you get enough into combat, the dig-in keeps them alive for a turn. If everything goes right, they're actually quite good, and their output is, you know, good enough for their points, for sure. But in a real game, it's really hard to get enough to the target, or get it onto the target, or keep them alive against a lot of the anti-infantry tech in the game. So that's kind of a problem, because really, in Faithful Masses, your options are limited to Idrians, Forge Guard with the Attendant Priest, and that's it.
Deliverers.
Sorry, if you're Polish, you also get Deliverers.
Yeah, you have to.
So those are your three options. Now, I don't know how many people even own Deliverers, so I'm not really going to consider that an option. But if you want to try some Deliverers, they're not... In theory, they're not completely terrible, but your mileage may vary. So the problem with this list is you've got Idrians and Forge Guard. You probably take one unit of each. Some people take two Idrians, min unit, and a unit of Forge Guard, or two max unit of each unit. It doesn't really matter. They're your only options. That kind of sucks. The good thing about the theme list, there's a couple of good things. So firstly, you get access to Paladin Champions, which are very good. They are great at standing on a flag. They're great at, you know, contesting a flank by themselves because they're really hard to kill. And they have a bunch of utility rules which can just screw over some matchups. You know,
they have a
knockdown, girded, stuff like that. Just a lot of luxury rules that can help you in a lot of matchups. So they're really good. You get a free Vilmon, which gives all your paladins Righteous Vengeance, which is nice because it works on the horses. You can have some normal paladins, which are okay. And the best part about the theme is you get a wall. So if you're playing a squishy caster, which Protector has quite a few of, you just get to put the wall down and then you get plus 4 defense. So those are the two good things. You also get Hand of Vengeance on your Warjacks. I mean, it doesn't really matter. It's not really... You're going to have a couple of Warjacks in your battle group. They're going to suck because, you know, you don't really want to take any, but you have to. If they happen to get to hit something, they're going to hit them really hard, but, you know, whatever. Maybe you can drop Quire if you want because of that. It's not really a great benefit. One thing which I will say is Allegiant of the Order of the Fist is an overrated model. So that's going to be a hot take. I want to say that now before we get to the hot takes later.
That is definitely a hot take.
I'm going to get some hate for this, and that's fine, but I think they're overrated, and I don't even like it that much. If you're playing Harbinger and you can keep them alive from, you know, a lucky shot or something, it's okay. If you can't, they're really not very good. And I don't just mean... There's two ways that I don't like them. First is they're not actually that good. Like, if they just roll a good roll and they kill them, your model didn't do it anyway. So the other problem is they don't play well. So, you know that... The rule called, you know, Battle Wizard or Quick Work, you get to do something and then go and do your spell or whatever. Well, I don't know why these models don't have it, along with the Paladins. Why can't you kill something and go into stance? Like, that just plays so much better. It's so much enjoyable to play. Instead, you have to choose between doing anything at all and staying alive. So you can stay alive and do absolutely nothing, or you can do some work and then die.
Like, I see the problem with this model for you, Jack. It's a support model.
No, it's not a support model.
It is a support model. It's a support model for the scenario game.
No, but Faith of Masses already has really good solos for scenario play. Now, if you put Allegiance into Creator's Might, then we can talk about it. At that point, maybe I would like them. That's a different conversation. But right now, in this theme, it's just more of what the theme already has. And it's not particularly good at anything. Like, they just don't play well, you know? They should be able to do something and then go into stance. It's just, in my opinion, it's bad design. You know, it's not enjoyable to play with. Anyway, that's all I'm going to say about Allegiant of the Fist. So Faith of Masses is not a bad theme. Keeps your caster alive. Have some mediocre unit options and some really good solo options. It's fine. It's a decent infantry list. And then we'll go into the last one, which is the best theme list. Exemplar Interdiction.
The very best.
The very best. I mean, it does it all, right? It has access to pretty much the best units in the faction, with, you know, maybe some minor exceptions. It has access to a lot of the good combat solos. The only one it doesn't have access to that you might want is obviously the Paladin champions, but you get to make up with it with other models. It gives you plus 2 inches of deployment, which is amazing. Protector, it gives you Bless on your Warjacks, which is also amazing. We can come back to it later when we talk about a specific model, and it gives you 3 points. Like, it gives you everything.
It also gives you Sev 0, which is important. Another model we'll probably come back to later.
Yeah, we'll
or mention
later.
A lot.
Sev 0 is available in this theme and in Creator's... Creator's Might.
Yep, correct.
Exemplar Interdiction, best theme list. You don't have to play two lists in this theme. You can if you want. But it should definitely be one of your lists should be in this theme if you're playing Protectorate. That's it. Not much else to say about the themes.
Yep, indeed. So we're going to probably do something a bit different, which is we're probably going to do it in cast in Jack's order, which is going to be pretty random. So I might have to do like timestamps.
It's not really an order. I just separated the casts into three categories. I think the competitive ones, the can be playable if you know what you're doing, and the not competitive casts, I guess. Obviously, it's War Machine, you can win with any cast you want, but these are just my opinion on three categories in the faction. The question is, do we want to start at the top or at the bottom?
Start at the top.
Okay, we'll start at the top. So the top bracket, I guess you want to call it competitive casters. And I've put...
Harvey, Amon.
So yeah, it's Harvey, Amon, Serenia, Krios 1, Krios 2, Krios 3, Hieroclaim, and Thyra. Now, these are the casters that I think... basically have the tools you want to play as a main list in your pairing. They can deal with majority of matchups. They have a lot of flexibility in terms of, you know, whether it's just to hit mat buffs, damage buffs, threat range buffs, you know, keeps your guys alive, things like that. So I guess we'll start.
We'll start from the top. So we'll
basically go into each one.
Yep.
So Harbinger, the old Mark II princess, I guess. She's back. She's good. You probably know what she does. Similar to Mark II, she keeps the guys alive. You can really play her in Faithful Masses, Guardians of the Temple, or Exemplar and Addiction. I wouldn't recommend you play her in Creator's Mind just because...
It doesn't really make much sense.
Yeah, she has a bunch of focus, but she's squishy, and she wants infantry, and she wants the precious scenario, not lose on scenario, so... You can play her in anything. Just
her spell list doesn't even really help Jax that much.
No.
It's much more suited to an infantry list.
Yeah.
And all of her rules, too. Like, better for infantry because they generally have higher defense. Martyrdom doesn't work on Jax.
Oh, God, if it did. PP, please fix. No, wait, don't do that. If they ever modded Adjudicator, I would probably quit this game.
Like, generally, I would say that she doesn't really care much for Jax, except for that when they're necessary or broken. Yeah.
She really only wants Jax for a couple of reasons. One, if they can give her a bit of a gun line, so that, you know, you can pressure the table a bit more, or two, the Jax keep her alive. That's about it.
Devout.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, Devout, Templar, you know, anything like that.
She should have a character Devout.
She probably should.
I agree,
should.
Actually. I agree. And that would be pretty funny. I hate the Devout, but I would sometimes play it with Harvey, so, you know.
Yeah.
So that's Harvey. There's not much to say. She's good with infantry.
No, there is some things to get into. I reckon the thing with Harvey is, like, she kind of always was actually good.
She's my favorite cat. Well, Amon was my favorite Mark II cat. Not Amon, sorry. Durst was my favorite Mark II. But Harvey was the reason I played that faction. Just because she makes, every list sticky. With, like, the exception if you bring Grievous Wounds. And usually you have very limited access to a rule like that.
Yeah, well, the thing is, even if you have Grievous Wounds, a lot of times the Grievous Wounds is melee-based, which is a problem, because if you try and fight Harvey in melee, you're playing into her toolbox of awe, her feet, and honestly, just the fact that her army will still fuck you up. So you're not always trading up. Sometimes you do just have models that do destroy Harvey's toolkit, so to be fair, Harvey is a bit of a, like...
It's just counterplay, which is good.
I wouldn't say counterplays, like, more she does have the ability to just get countered, so I guess that means she's more like a...
It's very hard check, to, like...
That's it. Yeah.
I don't know, it feels very hard to get hard countered with her, but I have less experience in Mark III with her than I did in Mark II, and so...
There are more ways than back in the day.
I agree, instance, like, there's entire theme lists now.
Yeah, like, Grimkin can randomly counter her with some play Trolls. From the thing. Trolls can as well. Kator with their Manowar theme and their tankers. Also, the simple fact that if you just kill enough of her models...
I think tankers just bring them up to, like...
Okay, but tankers have range, which is important.
No, I agree. I mean, it's a good list to play into her, but I don't think it's a counter.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the only final thing about Harbinger that I will say is, if you are not the type of person who enjoys your opponent trying to kill your caster, I would avoid playing Harbinger. Because... pretty much every game, they're going to try and kill you, because that's really the only way they can win.
If they don't have a list designed to hard counter your list, and they're not getting a huge attrition lead yet, they'll probably go for the kill.
Well, the thing is, they can't actually get a huge attrition lead, because you can stop getting attrition lead. So they have to try and kill you after failing to get a huge attrition lead. That's
Oh, not always. Like, they can... If you have enough of an assassination threat to stop Harvey martyring down to one wound... then that gives you an attrition lead, because Harvey
sort of. But then if you're winning on attrition too high, she'll just martyr down to 1 HP and say, show me what you got.
Yeah.
Because otherwise she's going to lose, right?
She'll lose anyway, yeah.
Exactly. So it's just going to come down to they're going to try and kill you.
Probably. I would say also, in general, I'd say just put Adjudicator with Harvey with most of the lists. Like, it's just... You can't fit sort of. Zero into it, but I don't think that's super important in this one.
Well, the big deal is, like, the Judicator is already very powerful, has a lot of really powerful aggression, and one of the things is it's not that hard to kill if you can get there. Problem is, Arby can put a bunch of models in the way that never go away, so actually delivering a model to a Judicator becomes much more of an issue, unless you have those earlier mentioned counters.
Yeah, and even then, like...
The thing I will say is that if you take a Judicator, you can't take a Devout and get the third free card, which is kind of annoying. So you're probably just going to have no Devout, which, depending on the matchup, might not be a problem.
Yeah.
If you're playing Faithful Masses, you've got a wall, so it's probably okay. If you're not, and they have a list with a high assassination threat, it could be a problem. You might want to avoid Adjudicator in your pairing. in Harvey's list if that's what you're going for. But otherwise, yeah, Judicate's very good with Harvey.
Yep. So we'll probably move on then to Amon.
Amon, very super, super boring. All right, so Amon, you play him, Creator's Might, put a bunch of Warjacks, randomly pick them from your war room, doesn't really matter. The more the better. Put some Dervishes in to build synergy, and that's it. We're done. All right. Anything
moving
else you want to say about Amon? Nothing to say.
Solid guy.
Solid guy, except when they try and kill him.
I actually do have a question with Amon. So you're probably taking Sev Zero as a free card. So which Warjack do you put on Sev Zero?
None, because you can't have synergy with Sev Zero as Warjack.
Yeah, but you want Sev Zero in your list,
but
because
you don't, because you're Amon. You have ++3/+3 already. Yeah, why do you need another +1/+1?
Because you're playing Menoth. You want bigger numbers.
No, Amon doesn't need bigger numbers. He has the biggest numbers in the game. He needs to not die and not lose on scenario. Sev Zero doesn't help you with either of those things.
Sev Zero might help you not lose on scenario by being a model.
In fact, if you're going to do that, Tristan, because he'll give you +2 armor on a Warjack, that might help you not lose on scenario.
Legit. All right. But so apparently there are heights to the numbers that you're allowed to put on your War Machine models.
Not heights. There's just a point where it's diminishing returns.
Yep.
And once you get to +23 or whatever, there's really no reason to get to 24 or 5, 6, 7. It's just gratuitous. If you're going to one-shot something or two-shot something, you don't need to overkill it by 10 points. You know?
Hopefully not.
Anyway, Amon, super boring, very effective.
Do you play Adjudicator with him?
No.
Can you play Adjudicator with him?
No.
No.
He's not Adjudicator.
None of that new shit. Just take like 6 Crusaders, a bunch of Dervishes, and like, I don't know, Indita or something.
Hmm. All right then. Well, I can't really argue with that, so...
I wish there was more to say about Amon, but he's not.
You're right, there really isn't. I mean, he has old school Enliven, I guess, which means that he might also accidentally take it. But you're right, he kind of hasn't changed. But the only thing that's changed is his scenario game is better now that he has Warders, which also, I guess, help him not die randomly.
Well,
it means that you don't have to take Devout, I guess. Cool.
Scenario game is better than it was before, but it was really bad before. So now it's still
bad, great, but
not as bad.
Not as bad. Alright, so we'll go to Serenia then. High Exemplar Serenia is a new caster.
She's an interesting one. She's a new caster. At first I thought, you know, you can only play her in Exemplar Interdiction. However, it's... One of the Polish lists was Serenia and Creator's Might with 2 Judicators. Now that's like a corner case. I haven't played it. I don't know how good it is, how good Rockwall is at keeping those two alive. I suspect it's not particularly good. It looks like a good idea, but I think on the table it's not as good as it you want it to be. But I haven't tried it, so I could be wrong. Feel free to try it. I actually think she's not that bad in Faithful Mess. Even though none of her battle plans work on any models, her feat in Exemplar Interdiction is kind of not great, because all your models are defense 12. In Faithful Masses, most of your models are defense 13. You can have some with even higher, for example, the monks, if you take them.
Just the Adrians and Duggan.
Basically, which makes her feat quite effective. She also has a lot more high-impact warrior models to move with the feat, whereas in Exemplar, it's not that your models aren't high-impact, they're all just the same, that's the thing. They're all a bunch of weapon masters which are similar speed, so you can move one or move the other, it doesn't really matter. Whereas in Faithful Masses, if you move your Paladin, it's a huge difference compared to if you move your one Forge Guard or one Knight Exemplar, for example.
Oh, it's like...
So the feat is, a lot better in Faithful Masses. So you can consider playing her in that, it's not bad. She's a very well-rounded caster. She kind of does everything. She has a threat range extension. She's got a hit buff, damage buff. She's got a wall to keep you alive and an armor buff. And I mean, mediocre feat, but that's okay. I wish she was focus 7. That would make her really good. As is, she's just solid. Yeah. Good infantry caster.
She also doesn't die as well. She's not as, like, death-prone as a lot of these other casters are.
She has good stats for a Protector Warcaster, I'll say that.
Worst comes to worst, she can just give herself every turn, give herself, like, tough, because you've got nothing better to do with your battle plan, and just call it a day.
Sure, yeah. It's not bad. She's easy. She's flexible. You can play her in either of those things. I don't know if you would play her in Guardians of the Temple. It's probably not terrible. I haven't really thought about it, though, so...
Yep.
All right, now let's talk about Chaos 1, 2, and 3. Bit of a family gathering here.
Well, this is not the first caster that there's going to be a family gathering of, I'll say as much.
I'm going to preface this by saying I hate Kraos 1, but I put him here.
I think that pretty much applies to a lot of people. Like, I do not... I would honestly put this guy in C tier, frankly.
I don't think he's C tier.
No, I put him there just because of how much success, or rather lack of success, I've seen with Kraos 1. But it
And I don't play Kraos 1, but I have tried him, and I can appreciate that he does some very powerful things, both on the table and in your matchup pairing process. For example, you know, if you don't have access to a node knockdown, you can't really walk into a range with your cast, or you just probably die. He has purification, which can screw a lot of casters. You know, lamentations, you know, whatever, but occasionally he can come up as well.
Yep.
And yeah, I mean, those things do have an impact when you're both selecting a caster to play against your, you know, protectorate, and on the table, your positioning wise. So he does, you know, a lot of powerful things. The problem is he's very limited outside of that. He's very one-dimensional. If you can A, not get screwed by purification, and B, either stay out of his range for not his feet, or be immune to it, he doesn't really do anything. He has Defender's Ward, which is nice. It goes on a unit, makes it pretty tanky, but outside of that...
End of the day, Kraos 1 is, I'd say, probably one of the biggest gear check casters in the game.
Yes. Definitely.
He literally is your raid boss, who basically is... There's not much nuance to him. Either you lose to his shtick or you don't. Like, so he is one of those casters, I say, where you could just fully buy into his pop-and-drop plan, and you'd be correct, right? Like, you'd start taking things like Redeemers, because...
Yeah.
Let's be honest, right? If you were dropping into Kraos into a matchup where Redeemers weren't good, then you are probably losing that matchup anyway. Correct.
I used to think the opposite. But he can already kill you. Why don't I just hedge and take a normal list and have a little bit of assassination? At the end of the day, I realize, you know what? I'm playing Kraos 1. Let's not beat around the bush. I'm taking it because they're going to look at my list and go, oh my god, you have two Redeemers and Adjudicator? Oh, I better not get knocked down because I'm going to die. That's pretty much the way to go, to be honest. You don't have to really drop him. You can just use the bully of pairings if you want and never drop him. If your opponent doesn't respect it, you can drop him and just kill him.
Yep.
Yeah, depending how good he is, or et cetera, et cetera. So,
I mean, Kraos himself is vulnerable to getting knocked down, as it turns out.
I mean, he really isn't, but if your opponent is bad, it can. Let's put it that way.
You said it, not me. I will say...
I did say it, yes.
I will say, though, that I think Kraos is best played in Creator's Might for simply that reason. Like,
yeah, I think so, too. You can play him in Exemplar. He's not terrible, but in Creator's Might...
Defender's Ward on, like, Errants or some shit like that is fine. You could, frankly, put Defender's Ward on a lot of things, and it's fine. But with Sev-Zero on the table so that you can start running Redeemers properly, and you want Sev-Zero anyway because he makes your assassination better, and he means that your Redeemers will do stuff on turns where you don't pop your feet, it seems fine. The only downside, say, with that plan is that purification kind of screws yourself over if you have to cast it. But, oh well, that's...
It's more of a threat than actually. You don't actually...
Yeah, if Kraos casts purification, the game is over one way or the other, typically speaking.
Yes. I mean, usually
it's
the first step.
Yeah. So I guess we'll go into Kraos 2. Now, Kraos 2 had a big facelift in the latest CID.
Well, he was essentially brought up from C to A.
Zero to hero. Yes, pretty much.
Oh, he might have been below C, but anyway.
Oh, wow. He was on his own D tier.
Well, I mean, I said Kraos...
He was in his own special fanboy tier.
Great.
I don't want to insult too many of the listeners who actually like the old Kraos 2. So we're going to talk about his current version.
I'm just going to preface this one part. Like, if Kraos 1 was a gear check, Kraos 2 was, like, the highest, like, the most fucking straight gear check, and was basically, could you kill Knight's Exemplar en masse?
Here's the Doom Reaver spam of metal.
Yeah, except your guys, instead of being, like, speed 6 AD reach models, were speed 5 no reach, no AD models.
And no Pathfinder. Why do you think he's in his own, his own tier? Anyway, let's talk about his current version. So his current version is... He's got a bunch of stuff on his card, which is nice and neat, but really all he does is he gives you tough on your models. It's kind of like Urask. That's pretty much all he does. He's got an armor buff. He's got Sacrosanct, which looks amazing, but really is only okay. But really, he's just... He makes a bubble of tough around him for Exemplar Warrior models. You're really only ever going to play him in Exemplar Interdiction because, like, if you can't give tough to your models, why are you playing him in the first place? So I'm not really even going to consider him in the other themes. I don't think he's playable at all.
No.
So in Exemplar, you just take a pile of Exemplar. You put a Charge in there, I think, because it's, you know, it fits into his game plan, and then just run at the enemy, you know?
I mean,
if you get there, you kill everything, roll some tough checks on the way, hopefully you have some models left, and yeah, it's like, it's not a gear check like Krios 1, but it's kind of like the...
No, I mean, it's basically, to be honest, right, nothing has actually changed. He's just better at his old gear check plan than he used to be.
Better enough to a point where he's playable.
Yep.
Before, you just had to kill some crappy 12-15 models. Now, you have to kill a bunch of 12-15 tough, no knockdown models that come back with the Church. So,
yeah, side note, don't leave home without Gravis. Like.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no, you have to take Gravis, otherwise you don't get knocked down when you get tough.
Yeah,
that defeats the whole purpose. So, yeah, he's also one-dimensional.
It has to be said, though, that his feat, just even on raw paper alone, is fucking terrifying. Auto-hit, extra attack on all your melee models. It is one of those feats where, if you're playing into Krios 2, like, if you actually give him an ideal feat, you just immediately lose. So, don't.
Yes. If he feats and he's happy about it, you probably lost.
Yeah.
You want him to feed for, like, 3 models and be like, oh, guess I'll do it. And then you have, you know, a game.
Yeah. So. And to be fair, like, there's a lot of Exemplar models where him feeding and going in is just, like, incredibly terrifying. Like, him feeding on Bastions going in, or even just regular Knights Exemplar going in. So they start chopping in, cleave, buy another attack, cleave again. You just... That Knight Exemplar and Krios 2 kind of just work hand in hand.
Yeah.
You have Inviolable Resolve, so you can probably play Adjudicator with this guy as well. Like, you lose Battle Charge, but you gain the ability to have your dude swarm of, like, fuck you, actually have a ranged presence, so that's probably
so
fine.
So, in my opinion, there are 2 battle groups you can build. It's the Adjudicator. The pros is you get Adjudicator, you get a ranged presence to go over the Church. The con is you have a huge base, which you don't really love trying to deploy and unpack around. Unlike the Church, you can't tactician through Adjudicator. It's a little bit annoying, but it's Adjudicator, so it's okay. The other option is you can run a battle group of Fire, Salvation, plus 2 Lights, whether they're Dervishes or Purifiers, up to you, depends on how the points work out. That's good because Fire, Salvation is bonkers when his bond is up with Krios, and the Lights are great for Battle Charge and, you know, just
being lights cheap,
efficient.
Frankly, if you're one of, I mean, kind of like Harvey, right? If one of the only ways you can die is from Krios just, you know, eating it in the face... Which can happen, given that, kind of like Irusk, he's got the main problem. Like, his army can be so good at attrition that you just got to go for the face.
Yeah, but his stat line is not the same as Irusk. It's not...
It's 14-17, which is pretty good, yeah. But, you know, still might be vulnerable.
I mean, I got charged by Grail, alright? It was fine.
Unique problems in Sydney meta, charged by Grail.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm pretty sure if Irusk got charged by Grail, he would probably be dead,
yes.
Yes. Anyway... Not much else to say about Krios. He's a bit one-dimensional, but he's actually reasonably effective at his game plan now, as opposed to Mark 2. Krios 3!
Krios 3 is your favourite caster, I think, in this faction.
One of my favourite casters. He kind of does too many things. That's my problem with Krios 3. He does too many things, but he's not a specialist in any of them.
He's a jack-of-all-trades.
Yeah, he gives you a lot of options in every matchup. But the problem is you have to play them very well because they're not super good. Like, what I mean by that is all his spells are decent, but they're all, like, the second best option of that spell. So let's say, for example, he's got a Jack buff. He's got a Sail, which is fine, but it's not as good as Redline, for example. You know, it's not as good as, you know, even...
It's also, like, very situationally better in a lot of factions. Like... Banshees like it, or Marauders love it because you get extra slams.
Yeah. But Menoth is not one of those factions. Yeah.
There are no ranged slam guns in Menoth.
It doesn't have to be even ranged, just really it's just uniquely convenient.
Yeah.
It never come up. Put it this way, a Sail, extra distance, never come up for me.
Exactly.
I've played it for the
PS3. Yep, you don't have Clamjacks.
So that's a Sail. Now, he's got a defensive buff in Holy Ward, which is just strictly worse than... Well, not strictly, but...
Menoth itself is not suited for abusing Arcane Ward.
Yeah, exactly. So, in my opinion, Holy Ward, or Arcane Ward as it's called now, is both worse than Defender's Ward and Inviolable Resolve at the moment, just because of the way stat lines work and infantry armor works. Holy Ward, death isn't that good right now in the current meta, and immune to spells on infantry is kind of irrelevant. So, it's at its best, that spell, when he casts it on himself. to be honest. But you can't really afford to do that on turn one and two. So
usually you feed and then you put it back on yourself, is what I've found.
Yeah, yeah. It's got an average defensive buff. It's got an average threat range buff. He's got a ghetto purification in his feet, which is fine, but you can really only do it once a game. So, you know, second best off, you know what I'm saying. He's got a damage buff in Ignite, which is okay, but it's still worse than, say...
Fury.
Fury is worse than... what's it called? Silence of Death. It's worse than... What else do we have in Menoth? I mean, it's okay. Ignite is the spell on his card, which is closest to being, you know... not second best compared to others in the faction, but still not the best one. And then he's, what else has he got? He's got
Force Hammer,
which is kind of like a really shit mad buff, which I've almost never cast outside of the feet turn.
I did forget he had Death Sentence, to be honest.
It's a mad buff, but you got to target them all. Bad is that?
It's pretty shit. It's a bad spell because you have to put in the effort to get it on a model for a spell that might give you zero return. Because the reason why you're missing is, like, you're either missing something that you feel like you should have hit, but then you're not casting it anyway, unless you, like, really need to hit for some reason.
Well, let's be honest, right?
You're putting it on a model that you're probably going to miss, so your chances of hitting the second time aren't much better.
Let's be honest, right? We just said that defense is not that great, and that also means a lot of people just aren't
having
defense skews.
Like, Menoth doesn't have map issues as well. Like, it's just a shit spell, right? I might have cast it, even on feet turn, I'm not in range to cast on anything a lot of time. I might have cast that once in, like, 2 years.
Right. Well, I mean, here's another thing. Like, you need Death Sentence, basically. Realistically, you're using Death Sentence to kill casters. But if you look underneath Death Sentence, there's another spell there that's really good at lowering the defense of casters.
If that is Death Sentence, Force Hammer is good.
Look, if you're going to kill someone's caster with Krios, you don't need Death Sentence.
No, you have Force Hammer.
You know when I cast Death Sentence, although I forget a lot of the time, when I charge someone's huge base with Krios and I feed, and I put Ignite on myself, sometimes I remember the Death Sentence, the Defense 9 model.
Just to make sure you
just
don't...
Just in case I roll double one.
Yeah.
I completely forget, to be honest, because it's just such a bad spell. But I've never said, damn, I wish I cast Death Sentence. It's just a shit spell. Then he has Force Hammer, which is a really good spell. Now, the problem with the Force Hammer is... Usually you want an arc node, you know, when you have Force Hammer. Like, you know, playing Ran or whatever. Even the Nemo 3...
Sometimes like takes an arc node,
Haley 3, you know, stuff like that. Because it's a really good spell, it's really threatening, but you need an arc node. And the problem with Krios 3 is Protectorate. And Protectorate have really bad arc nodes. And I mean, really bad. Your options are super overcosted Blessing of Vengeance, which you don't have a bond for. Slightly overcosted Revenger, which has no rules. And is speed 5 for a light, which is atrocious. And you have the very decent in melee, but speed 4 arc node in heavy called the Guardian. So between those three, you're just not going to take any of them because they're all hot trash. So at being an arc node, I mean. So you're just not going to have an arc node, which means he's still got Force Hammer, which isn't bad. Like, it's a range 10 spell, which goes to range 12 with the Hierophant, which isn't too bad. When he casts it, he's usually just casting it with his face. He's just going to walk up, cast it, and reposition back, hopefully behind a building or a forest, which is fine.
Usually what happens is he can charge Repo, and as you said, he's pretty safe most of the time he does any of this.
He's hard to kill, you know. But he's not going to be force-hammering a lot of stuff. Even though he might want to threaten it, he's not realistically going to be able to. So he's got the spell. he's probably the worst force-hammer caster in the game, to be honest. I mean, I'm happy it's on his spell list, but it's hard to use. So really, he's got a bunch of spells which are good, but not optimal and might be situational. Which means you have game into pretty much everyone when you play Krios 3, but you don't really have slam dunk into anyone. Because, you know, if you need to do something, he can probably do it, not super efficiently or the best at doing it, but he can probably get it done. So you need to, I guess, outplay your opponent if they have something that's, you know, really easy to execute. But which makes him fun to play. You always have a bunch of options. And his personal output is one of the best things about him. He's got a long threat range. He can kill pretty much whatever you put in front of him. You put an Arcane Shield or Stormwall in front of him, he'll kill it.
Yeah, in part he's got Blessed on his weapon, so...
He'll kill it, right? It's not really a question. So yeah, I like him because of that. He's got a good end game. He's got a lot of options to help him get to the end game, but he doesn't really give you any free wins, you know, like some other cards. Like, Harvey has a lot of free wins. There's a bunch of melee living models trying to kill you, or kill your stuff, just go next round. It's not going to happen. So,
I would say probably one of the things here, and it might be the reason why both him and Thyra are in this category, although Thyra, I think, is probably a better character, is that unlike most Menoth casters who are frankly quite anemic and melee and generally speaking not very, you know, like, if you're committing your caster, like, Harby probably has a better, like, output because she just auto-hits with every attack with her 10 focus, but, you know, that's not really part of her game plan. That's...
Harby, can I just quickly say something about Harby? Harby's output is completely different to Kirill's suites. Because when Harby goes in, it's clear a zone to win on scenario. So auto-hitting is really good for her. Kirill's 3, when he wants to go in, he wants to kill a heavy.
Yeah.
He's run out of other models to kill
it. Well, he kills a heavy and jukes out of the way of a couple of the other heavies. You get a cheeky thing in, right? Like, with most cavalry casters, they do very similar things, right? Mm-hmm. Most decent cavalry casters, at least. And, yeah, like... And I gotta say, that's probably a, like, nice thing to have in Menoth, because, you know, usually you don't really have that kind of flexibility. But...
So...
I would say that Kraus probably is B tier, but I can respect you liking this guy.
I think he's top B tier or bottom A tier, depending how good you are with him or a player in general. Yeah. If you're good enough, either with Kraus 3 or good enough as a player in general, I think you can make it into A tier. And I think that's a good way to lead into Thyra, because you already mentioned Thyra when you compared her with Kraus 3. Thyra kind of is like Kraus 3. She does a little bit of everything. The reason Thyra, I think, is a solid A and Kraus 3 is not... It's because Thyra's buffs are actually arguably best in category, the ones that she does. For example, Occultation is amazing. Sure, there are ways to see through stealth, but they're not always on the entire army, for example, and not every caster has access to them or has bothered to take them. And in just some matchups, it just shuts down the shooting completely, you know, if they don't have any way. Like, you play against Ossian, and you Occultate your front line, he's like, well, I guess I can't shoot anything.
Hmm. Well, you octantate your caster, so now that's off the table if they want to
Thyra
go for your face.
Well, Thyra already has stealth, so you
whoops.
So,
she gained stealth, that's right.
She is survivable. She has gained stealth.
Yeah.
So she is survivable because she has stealth. She's the only caster in Protectorate that has stealth. And she has defense 17, so, you know, that's not too bad either. So she's also survivable like Kraus. She gives stealth, which Kraus gives Holy Ward massive upgrade. Occultation's way better. She has a damage buff, which I already mentioned earlier, the best in slot, I guess. Silence Death, you know.
Silence of Death, when takedown is relevant, it's super relevant.
Most of the time, it might be the same as Ignite, you know? But when it's relevant, it's a massive deal.
Yep.
That's something she has over Kraus, is that she literally has a meta answer to something.
Yes.
Where Kraus really has... He has Purification, which is always more... randomly
it's not
useful.
A meta answer. Purification is like a luxury ability.
But it's a really good all comers ability for an already all rounder kind of caster. Well, she actually has something like, play into tough while I have takedown.
Yeah, it's like I'm an all comers caster as well, but I also have this random fuck you to certain matchups.
That's right.
Yeah.
Kind of like Vlad, too. He's a very good all-rounder, but he has cloud wall answers, which makes him more useful.
Like a lot of good casters have very similar traits.
So, remember when we said Death Sentence was a shit spell for a hit buff?
Carnage is not.
You know what's not a shit spell? Carnage. Carnage is a good spell when you're... For two reasons. Normally, Carnage on a Focus 6 caster isn't that good, because you have to get too close. Now, on Thyra, there's two reasons why it's really good. Firstly, she has stealth, so she can get farther up anyway. Secondly, she has Gates of Death, which is a unique spell to her, which is... how shall I put it?
Fucking ridiculous.
At the end of her turn. Importantly, at the end of the turn. She can walk up as far as she wants. She can cast Carnage, apply it to every model that she wants to attack. And at the end of the turn, she can just disappear backwards 6 inches. And still be stealth. So it's, you know, back onto the flag.
It's retroactive sprint, basically.
Yeah, it's Fate Walker, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, that's a good way of putting
it. It is actually just Fate Walker, except it's a place, which can be even better.
Even better, so... now, the only issue I would say... Oh, she also has Stranglehold, which has the same problem with Force Hammer in Menoth, which is, what's an arc node? So...
But, like with Kraus, she can apply it with her face if she has to. It does have all the Stranglehold problems, i.e. it's still RNG, whether it works or not, and...
It's actually better than Kraus casting Force Hammer, because A, she's stealth, which B, she has a 6-inch teleport back, as opposed to a 3-inch repo.
Yeah.
But the problem is, it's Stranglehold, and it's power 11, and you roll shit.
I mean, yeah. This is strange. Like, Menoth is not a faction that has access to, say, Silas, so you can't get the Signs of Pawns effect on that, which would be what you'd really after. So you can reliably get this, or more reliably, I should say, get the Stranglehold off against, say, an armor buffed Colossal.
Yeah, and then the last thing I think is, remember how Krios had a sail, which is +2 for range. Thara's Feet gives +2 to everything. So it's better than one model.
And it's a place, too, which is...
I just mean as a threat range extender as opposed to getting into combat, but even then it's, you know, useful for that. So yeah, she's basically flexible like Krios. She does pretty much everything that he does, but better. The only downside is that she doesn't go as far as Krios personally and doesn't hit as hard. So her late game is slightly worse.
She might kill infantry better, though. With overtake.
She does have only half-inch melee range, but...
Oh, wow, she does. Yeah, okay, no.
I mean, it's fine. Like, what she'll do typically for her endgame is she'll pick out a guy... Like, she'll help clear a zone by stabbing a couple of guys with her two initials, and then...
Yeah, she can do that. That's fine. Like, she's not bad at killing stuff. She's just not Krios 3,
just doubling back real quick, actually, probably wrapping both of these classes up, what list would you recommend for both Thyra and Krios 3? Because they're both
skipped over that. So, Krios 3, I think, optimally wants to play in his Emperor Interdiction. Just because it gives you access to Gravis, which makes him more survivable, and, you know, he's, it's not Elite Cadre. I think it's Elite Cadre.
It's Elite Cadre. It also works on him.
Elite Cadre works on Gravis, so if you like rolling lots of dice, you get to roll lots of dice with Gravis.
If you like rolling lots of dice, just play Menoth. That's something to start with.
In particular, he gives Vengers also lots of dice, so you want to play Exemplar for that. Basically, I think he's optimally played in Exemplar. You can probably play him in Faithful Masses. I've tried it. It's okay. It's okay. I mean, it's playable. Don't play him in the other two themes. Thyra can play in, I would say, her best place is probably Exemplar Interdiction. Now, the reason I say that is because Occultation is really good on Exemplar models. Because they hit really hard and they have a problem getting to what they want to hit. So if you give them stealth, you know, you can probably get there and then you hit them really hard, you know.
Occultating a Death Ball of Errants seems pretty good to me, right?
Yeah, like... whether it's Errants, Vengers, you know, whatever you want, really. They're all hit really hard. She's also good in Flame Guard theme. She was kind of designed for that theme and she is good in the theme. I just don't know if you need to play her in that theme. So... both of themes are good. You can play them in Faithful Masses as well. I don't really love it. It's okay. I tried it. I technically won that game, but we'll call it a loss. It's okay. She gives a bit of threat range to that list and a bit of number fixing, I guess you want to call it that, which the list can have issues with.
End of the day, she doesn't really improve Idrians that well. Like, I guess you can occultate them, or you can occultate them.
Occultate Idrians are quite good. And then when you get the charge, you put Silas Death on them, they hit at power 16, which is actually really high.
Yeah.
The only problem is she doesn't do anything...
For the solos?
She doesn't do anything for the solos, and she doesn't... Like, I'd rather play her in a different theme, because I think she offers more, whereas you could put someone else in Faithful Masses.
Let's be honest, right? Does she... Like, she can't really run Faithful Masses as well as, say, Harvey can, right?
No. And not even as well as Sirenia, in my opinion, or even Krios 3, to be honest.
Yeah,
and definitely not as well as Hyra Claymore.
Yeah. Speak of the devil!
Don't play her in Krios, mate.
Don't do that. She does give her threat extension to Menoth Jax, so...
So we've left the best for last.
I don't know how much we're going to talk about this one.
I don't know. He certainly seems to be public enemy number one.
Yeah, but go listen to Tactical Tips, the latest episode, if you want the latest scoop on Hyra Claymore.
I'm gonna interject there because there's one problem a lot of people have with Hyra Claymore, and that's the honey trap in on. So Hyra Claymore's list is basically Hyra Claymore, Judicator, Sev 0. And then mash as many Exemplar buttons until the button sort of breaks.
Well, technically, there's two ways you can play Hyra Claymore. Three ways you can play Hyra Claymore. You can play him in Creator's Might with two Adjudicators. You can. That's one option.
Sure.
Second option is you can play him in Faithful Masses the old school way, which is fine, with or without Adjudicator, probably with one. And the third one is the one that I play, which is in Exemplar theme, which a lot of people are also playing with Adjudicator and a bunch of Exemplar. And I think that's the best way to play him currently. But yeah, I'll let Chris say his.
say my piece about this. So the big thing with High Reclaimer is that High Reclaimer has 32 jack points. This is important in Exemplar Interdiction because it effectively means that compared to any other caster running his thing, he actually has two free cards. One, because he can take Seb Zero, Choir, and Stillfit Adjudicator in. I don't believe any other caster can, or if there is, it's like not a rather playable one. Most of the other ones.
No, you're correct, I believe.
Yeah. So that's important. Like, you have access to kind of a unique slot there. The second thing that's quite important is that his... honestly speaking, his Judicator is the biggest honey trap in the game. It's terrifying. It's very strong. It does a lot of work. It also killing the Judicator means that you're kind of not really dealing with the rest of the Menoth army, and those guys are all weapon masters who are just happy to be there, and definitely happy to come back after dying once. Also happy to receive Hand of Fate, because let me be perfectly honest, the Judicator sometimes, slash often, doesn't really need it. And yeah, you've just got a lot of good things going on. Like, High Reclaimer is probably, I wouldn't say he's the best caster in the game, but there's actually argument to be said for that. And in part it is because this, like, nightmarish mesh of stuff. And then you got stuff like, I don't think Jack wants to talk about the best model on the High Reclaimer list, because not the Judicator, not High Reclaimer himself. It's not Sev Zero, technically. It's Sev Zero.
It's actually his Dervish.
It's Dervish.
Alright, I'll talk briefly about this, because I'm not going to spend too long on High Reclaimer, because a lot of people have already talked about him. But, so, with High Reclaimer, if you take Sev Zero, you have access to a Warjack on Sev Zero. Now, I think the best option is Dervish. The reason for that is because, there's a couple of reasons. Firstly, scenario-wise, you want to score rectangle zones. You don't really want to put your Judicator in there, because you want to be optimizing where it is, you know, shooting stuff, you know, on a base bit. You don't want to put it in a zone and not be able to shoot where you want to shoot. So the Dervish can score the zone. That's the first thing. The second thing is, now that there's always a line of sight blocker in the middle of the table, a lot of the times it's going to be, you know, a forest. Maybe, you know, some cloud terrain or whatever. And a lot of times there'll be an objective as well on the table. So what you can do is, you can put your Dervish behind the forest within range of your objective, which means there is a giant bubble where they can't walk with any model that they want to keep alive. Because otherwise, you're going to give it Pathfinder, and you're going to warp off, road tour, I should say, through the forest, and then kill it. Straight up kill it. Because with Sev Zero and Hand of Fate, if you need it, that'll kill pretty much anything short of a colossal.
Power 16, so, two attacks, sidestep, blessed.
Parry, yes.
Parry, Hand of Fate, like...
Yeah, it'll kill pretty much anything. It'll trivially kill your caster, put it this way.
Yeah, so, like, it's trade-off.
I had that happen.
Yeah, its trade-up value is quite terrifying.
Yeah. I think the Dervish only had one arm against Brian when I killed him.
One arm
against Vlad 2, capping 2 focus. I think that was what it was.
Oh, GG. Easy.
That was okay, so how do we play an Adjudicator going into WTC? Let's play some games. Oh, God.
Yep.
Why is it not the Adjudicator that I'm worried about?
So, everyone's worried about the Judicator and, you know, High Reclaimer's clouds and his exemplars. You have to pay attention to where the Dervish is. It doesn't have to do anything, but it will force you to respect it. If you don't respect it, it will kill you.
It's board presence.
Yes.
You can take a Purifier as well. That would be the other option to recommend.
My issue with the Purifier is a better defensive piece, but without parry and sidestep, it doesn't quite go as
it doesn't. It doesn't go on random murder adventures. Yes. Not quite as effectively, certainly. Also, the Dervish has combo strike, which means that sometimes you can just...
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes you just need that.
Because you hit so hard individually, there's no reason to.
Yeah.
But, you know, if they have a caster capping, like, a bunch of focus, but he's squishy, you might just combo a bunch of them, so...
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, if you combo with it, you actually go to power 20, so, with Hand of Fate.
Yeah, like, that, especially if that caster has just been mauled by a Judicator randomly, or, frankly, has just hit a bunch of
power
random rockets.
Power 20, Hand of Fate, you can one-shot an armor 15 caster through that, if you roll well.
Yeah.
Through focus, I mean...
So, I will say, like, you are right that a lot of people have covered High Reclaimer himself fairly extensively one way or another. It does a lot depend on what your local Menoth player is actually doing with him, which is important. Yes. But the big thing I would say to listeners is, like, you, just because you killed the Judicator doesn't mean the nightmare's over. Like, fucking Elmond, Frawley, has made multiple lists which have had the Judicator either shoot zero times or shoot, like, once ineffectually and then being killed trivially, and has lost badly the immediately the following turn. Either the Dervish killed Cold Grammar or...
or everything else killed the mountain, the Glacier King, and the Mauler, and
like the entire High Exemplar army is like, well, that's some great overextension you just did there, but I'm sorry, you're just about to lose everything.
Yes, you have to. If you can kill the Judicator, but you can't kill it without expending a significant amount of points, you haven't really done anything. If you send two heavies in to kill the Judicator, that's not going to get you anywhere because you have to trade it evenly.
You have to trade up. You can't trade even. You got to trade up.
Yeah,
because Hyroclaim,
then you're definitely in trouble because then you've traded Colossals and you're playing as Hyroclaimer afterwards. That's.
I mean, let's be honest. Hyroclaimer is literally the mayor of Value Town. Like, he plays 10 points up off his nearest Menoth competitor, effectively.
I mean, his feat is technically worth like 20 points. But
exactly.
We'll,
so
we'll go with 10.
Yeah, we'll go like, okay, so at the very worst, he's rolling up in this 100-point game plus free solos with his 120/130-point army. Just,
yes.
You know, how do you do? And all that army is just hard-hitting weapon masters who sometimes when they die, dying is beneficial for them.
But if you can take the duty off the table without expending too much, for example, if you can shoot it off the table, which is very hard, but maybe possible, then... That's not a bad plan, so...
I will say also, if you have lists which can mitigate the Judicator's damage output, Solid Ground is a good example, but just basically some... Or even decently high defense heavies,
yes.
Then that actually does a lot. Because honestly speaking, a lot of times killing the Judicator is actually a mistake, even though it's doing so much damage, because the Judicator itself... Like, to kill the Judicator means you'd have to go through Hyroclaimer's army and basically ride into his threat range. Yes. So... Honestly speaking, a lot of times, it is better to just smash Hyroclaimer's army however you can, force him to feed, hopefully badly, and accept that the Judicator is going to shoot for 3 or 4 turns. I mean, hopefully you've got enough by the end of it. I will also say that RFP doesn't work against Hyroclaimer, just please don't bother trying.
It does work if you're ranged, and you have it on everything.
Yes. So, unless you're Ossian, or I guess you've somehow found your Sorcia 2 and have managed to make a list work for that... If so, please send it to me, because I'd be curious.
Yeah, if your plan is melee takedown, you might want to reconsider your options.
Yeah. So, at the last tournament you won with Hyroclaimer, how much did you feat for?
I feated once in 6 rounds.
And I believe you feated for 3 models, if I'm not mistaken?
No. I feated for the maximum. But the game was already over. I feated the turn the game ended without making any attacks.
I didn't need to feat,
to be honest. I don't know why I feated. It would have sounded better if I said I feated no rounds, but I accidentally feated because I was like, I should probably feed. Anyway.
We don't need to talk about one of the best casters in the game that much more, because people have probably already had this deal with him.
It's yeah, like Mark 2 Gatsby 2.
Go listen to Tactical Tips.
And right. Moving on to a caster that probably will never get covered by Tactical Tips and probably should never be covered by any decent cast, apart from that. But thankfully, our cast isn't really that decent at all.
We're chaotic good.
Apparently, we're chaotic good.
We're probably not going to spend as long on the next 2 tiers, because we've just finished the top category, I guess. We're going to go into the second category. These casters are playable, and in some cases, not bad, like decent. But they have some issues, in my opinion, in the meta, or just... in their design, which keeps them from being like the
Durst,
main caster in a pairing.
Yep. Durst is awkward. That's his problem.
That's a very good way of putting it, actually. Yep.
Durst has a lot of good rules and a lot of cool synergies, but it's just a little awkward to get right, which keeps him from being really good.
You know what I think is the most awkward thing about Durst? It's actually his feet. If his feet was just +4 armor on everything in the control area, I would actually like him a lot.
Yeah.
Instead, it's kind of like +4 armor and everything, you know?
But you have to then bubble wrap all your warjacks with dudes.
That's what I mean. It's so awkward.
Then the next turn, you have to get your guys away from the warjacks, because there's no warjack tactician here.
Or he should have some form of tactician to let his warjacks move through infantry or vice versa.
You really could just have +4 armor. That's not even broken. Like, Lucan has it, and whatever. So what? Anyway, instead, you got to do this awkward... awkward positioning, and then it's just it's just awkward. His spell list and his personal threat is actually pretty good. Like, he's got Disa, which is actually really nice in example. In particular, in
it makes him plus on feat turn plus 6 armor against shooting.
Yeah, it's nice, right? But he just, it's just so annoying to play on the table. Because you want to, like, get optimal positioning to, like, get board presence and threaten zones and shit, but then you've got to crowd around your warjack, or they just kill the models that you don't crowd around your warjack. So you kind of have to put everything around a warjack. Otherwise, what's not around a warjack is just picked off for free, and then it's just awkward, right?
I think one other problem with him is that his best thing to me probably is Creator's Mind, because he does some cool things. Like, he basically means that Sub-Zero is literally invincible and several of those other high-impact solos.
Yeah, plus and he needs Sub-Zero because he doesn't have a hit or damage bar.
Yeah, exactly. But, and you're playing in Creator's Might, which has all the problems we listed earlier, namely your negative scenario play, and you have double negative scenario play because you're playing Durst.
Yeah, and you can't spread out to the corners because you've got to clump your guys around. He has a lot of good stuff, right? He's got good numbers, good stuff. He's got good stats personally and good damage output personally and good threat ranges. He's just awkward to play.
Yeah, he's awkward, which is a shame.
You can somehow manage to play him in a formation that doesn't make it awkward. He's actually quite good.
Yeah, like,
I haven't really worked out how to do that.
You can get, like, you can make a very strong gear checklist with just, like, double Judicators Durst, right? You can have one of the Judicators run by, basically anyone, really. Yeah.
Sev?
Well, Sev probably runs something else because Durst's feat works on Warjax's battle group, but even then, like, you're still probably fine, right? And then, you know, you've got a very hard skew. Like, your Judicators are pretty much invincible from a lot of things, and, like, on the feat turn, they're definitely invincible. But, yeah, like, it's a different skew to what Menoth is, but, again, it leads into our problem. You're playing the Jack theme with a list that has deliberately built-in scenario weaknesses, and then you're in a kind of very strange spot.
Yeah, so, basically, he's awkward. He's okay, but he's awkward. So I don't really want to talk about him anymore, other than he has potential, and maybe someone can show me how to play him in a way that's not super awkward.
He's also kind of boring as well, I've found.
Boring is not really a reason to put him in the specific tier, because a lot of protector casters could be classified as boring. Like, Amon could be boring.
Everyone here is boring, frankly.
Durst is fun to play. I like playing Durst, but he's awkward, and I can definitely see that.
I've only had 3 games ever, maybe even 2 games only with him, and I could already feel the awkwardness. But, as I said, maybe if you've played enough games and you have a way to play him, then, you know, he's okay. Alright, let's move on to Severus 2. Oh, Severus 2, the hot and cold, freaking Katy Perry of Menoth. So, where do I start with Severus 2? You've got a bit of history going on this one.
Yep.
So, when Severus 2 was... came out, let's go on a history lesson.
Oh, yeah.
Well, not a history lesson, but I guess
a tour down memory lane, so to speak.
Yeah, memory lane. So when Mark II came out, Protector didn't have very many... Like, Harbinger was shit, you know. They didn't have that much going on for them, other than Amon. But Sev 2, when he came out in Mark 3, everyone's like, wow, he's amazing. Oracular Vision, his feet can blow stuff up for free without having to hit, you know. It's got all these things. This is before themes came out, obviously. And everyone's like, he's amazing. And then I was looking at him, and then I played a game or two with him, and I'm like, this guy's hot trash. Why is everyone talking about him?
But his oracular vision is so strong, and it works on his entire battle group, which has no threat extension. And he has Blessing of Vengeance and other high-powered arc nodes, like...
So... he does have Blessing of Vengeance, which with Sev 2 is only slightly overcosted. Kind of like Thorn with Haley, right? It's good, but you feel like you're paying a bit too much. Slightly too much. But still not so much that you wouldn't take him. So it's kind of like, you know, gotta take him. The problem with Sev back in the day was that when Mark 3 came out, everyone in the day was playing Warjax, you know, just a pile of Warjax. Because there were no themes, you didn't have 3 points. And, you know, there was, like, Karchev and the Mad Dogs, Varos and his Griffins. It was just Amon and his Warjax, you know, just a pile of Warjax. And then you have Sev 2 with all this cool stuff. He can blow up infantry, he can see through forests, he can tank shots with Oracular Vision. But then he has no threat range extension and no damage buff for his Warjax. And may I say, Protector Warjax are slow and they are not super accurate. So... What that means is you're playing a caster into a bunch of warjacks with no damage buff, no threat range extension, and it just sucked, right? It was just atrocious. So for about a year and a half, he was on my unplayable, like, not even, he was on his own tier of bad. And everyone else was, like, raving about him, you know? And it was just painful. And if you go back and look at the results, he didn't do very well.
Well, you notice he just fell off the radar because people kept trying, yeah. Because he should work, quote-unquote.
Yeah, he's written to be quite good at what he does, but no one's interested in what he's doing. So, yeah, it was all this hype and then disappeared. So for a year and a half...
One of the other things now, thinking back in memory lane, is that he also... Like, Meloth has a problem with their Warcasters dying. Sev-Zero is definitely a big problem, like, big, thing with this. I can't fucking use words, apparently. But basically, like, Sev-Zero, Sev-2 was dying all the time to shit like Kane 2 randomly killing him. Electrolytes killing him. Sorsha killing him. Like, there were
some excellent games where that guy was, like, hiding behind forests and models, and I'm like, I still kill you. It doesn't matter where you're on the table. Yeah. You're too close.
And if Sev has to, like, cast spells to kill your infantry, that just means he doesn't have any focus and then just randomly gets chumped.
So he disappeared for a year and a half. And then the themes came out during that time, and then infantry started to make a comeback. And I was like, wait a minute. Everyone's going to have an infantry pairing in their two lists. And you know what? Theme lists give you free solos. You know what the best targets for your speed are? Free solos. So everyone's going to have like two or three free solos that want to cap a flag with or play an important part in the list. And Sam is just going to walk up and go, you turn into a cloud. You turn into a cloud. And they're all just going to die for free. And I was like, that's amazing. Not only will they no longer be able to score flags when I feed, I will have killed like 20 points of free models. I understand it's free, but you know, you've still killed like 20 points of free models. And I was like, wow, he's going to be top tier. Like, absolutely at the top. Like, just below Hieroclaimer and Harbinger.
Had that go
and
for you.
Maybe, like, a month, he kind of was, in my head at least. I didn't actually have time to play him in that time. But from the list that I saw that were getting played, I'm like, wow. If he was playing Sam 2, he would have smashed the guy. And then, unfortunately, the medium-based theme status come out. Now, right. That's a general problem. So before, people were playing, like, infantry things, you know, it was like Shadows of Retribution, Winter Guard Command, whatever you want, like, even Storm Division to an extent. And then they're like, well, here's Primal Terrors. Have a bunch of 5-wound tough armor 18 models. Zeb's like, I can't kill any of those with my feet very well. That's not good for me. And then they're like, here, have Exemplar Interdiction. Have 8-wound Gators. You can have... You know,
have some Manowar tankers. Like, have some, like...
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. The worst offender. Armored Core. Have a top 21 tanker. Please feed on that with your power
tools. Our Armor 21 10 boxes. Go, go, Samsung. All
right. So even if you...
I got a free power 12. I'll turn into a cloud. No, I won't turn into a cloud. So... he went back from, I'm going to kill the world to, oh, I can't really kill the best stuff anymore. But he's not at the bottom, and the reason he's not in the bottom tier is because there's still a scenario game to be played now, as opposed to the beginning of Mark 3, where it wasn't really a scenario, it was just a bunch of heavies mashing into each other. And when you killed all of them, or pushed them out of the zone, you accidentally won on scenario. But it was really attrition. Whereas now, scenario is very important in your list building and how you play every matchup on terrain and whatever. And he's still good at that. If you don't want to put, like, expensive... melee combat solo on a flag just to spawn points. That's not a good use of that solo. So really you want to put shit still... You still want to put shit like Gremlin Swarms, you know, cheap support solos that don't have good stats but are providing a benefit by being there, you know?
Yeah, well, the other thing too is a lot of solos you do end up on flags tend to have defensive tricks and Sev-Zero just blows them up anyway. Like, yeah, if they've got Sackhorn, if they've got, like, yes. Orin Midwinter with his ability to cancel spells, Sev just clicks his fingers and the guy explodes.
So Sev-2 is in this tier because he has a good scenario game. And he is still good against a lot of infantry, not so much the medium-based infantry. I mean, he's okay because he has a rebuke still and a bonded ashes to ashes is still decent. But if he could take Sev-0, he would actually be in contention for the top category. But because he can't, he's in the middle category. He's fine. He has matchups where he crushes now, as opposed to none before. And he has some matchups which he struggles in, but he can still play a scenario game and probably win, depending on how well you play it. So he's here. He's not bad. Mm. He's not as polarized anymore as from, you know, start of Mark III to maybe 6 months ago.
One benefit is that most medium-based... I mean, for one, like, he does a pretty good number on a lot of Crix lists, for instance, because Crix don't really have a medium-based infantry swarm like... the rest of the factions do.
Yes.
And he does, like, a lot of people will be pairing their medium-based guys with either Jackalus, which admittedly he would be bad into, but also, like, random infantry lists, so sort of balance the pair.
Yes.
And if that's the case, then having Sev-Zero in your pairing will probably, like, again, it might be kind of very similar to Krios 1 kind of effect, except that Sev-Zero is less polarized and also less just randomly, like... Sev 2 is very less all or nothing, I think.
Like, sort of. He's not as all or nothing as he
used to be.
Used to be.
Yeah.
He does have a plan B now, which is scenario, but his primary game plan is a bit hit or miss.
I will say one other thing is that Oracular Vision is still quite strong against big high power weapon master swings coming in, especially if you can control the number coming in, because. Being able to discount a hit on your Jax is still quite, like, it's a strong period. And it means that if you can control the number of weapon masters going in, like, if 5 Exemplar charge your heavy's dead, Oracular Vision won't protect it. If 3 charge in, then your heavy is probably not even going to get crippled.
Yeah, it's good. It's also good with Enliven, because it's kind of almost, it's basically the same as the old Enliven.
Yeah, you can get away with getting the one hit in.
Yeah.
And should be all right. I will just say before we leave Sev-Zero, Sev-2. Fuck, I keep getting them wrong. What would you say is the thing you'd play this guy in?
I think he's good in. I think he's playable in 3 out of 4.
Right.
I think he's playable in Creator's Might. I don't love, as I've already talked about it. I don't love scenario with Creator's Might. But at least he can clear infantry a bit better, so he can help that out.
And clear the garbage out.
In Exemplar theme, because he runs a decent duty and it's blessed and, you know, it's good with it. With Oracular Vision, it's hard to kill with another heavy. And I think he's okay in Faithful Masses. I would probably play Adjudicator with him in that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, so those are options if you want to list build with him. Moving on to Malakas. I'm not going to talk too much about Malakas for 2 reasons. The first is I've only ever proxied 1 game with him. I don't actually own the model. I played 1 game with him. He was kind of average, but I put him here because he does something. He actually does something decent. Whether he gets to do it in a lot of matchups is up in the air, but if he gets his feet off and he gets a good feet, he will pump out a lot of damage. So he has that potential, which is worth something in my opinion. Also, Will Pagani thinks he's really good, and he's posted a bunch of lists on Facebook. So if you're interested in Malakas, go hit him up or go look it up on Facebook.
It's a shame there's a faction that's just immune to him now, though.
Yeah, I put him in the B tier because I was being conservative. I don't know if he is in the B tier or not, but as I said, if you want, go check out Facebook thread. Some good ideas there. I don't really want to talk too much about him.
I will say one thing with him is that he can take Adjudicator, take Sev-Zero, and then be able to squeeze in a Devout. So him and one other caster can replicate what Hieroclaimer does.
Yeah, obviously, Fiora 1 can technically do it as well.
But... yeah, that was the one other caster. Is Fiora 1 in this category?
No.
We'll anyway, get there. Malakas, I'm pretty sure, is Creator's Might only. So, but yeah, that's all I'm going to talk about.
If you get more fire attacks in another theme, he might see value.
Well, there are cleanses, right? But he doesn't boost accuracy, so they can't hit anything.
Yeah. You know, I reckon he's C tier, frankly, but, well...
he probably is, but I'm being conservative, so... Yeah, he might be C tier.
Alright, well, let's go with the next one, which I think actually does belong in this category, is Resnik 2.
Resnik 2. He's recently taking a bit of a hit with the Red CID, I'll say. He used to be very hard to kill, and now he's not hard to kill, because all their bows are magical. Anyway, not really super relevant, but Resnik 2, so his upsides are, he has quite a few good spells. He's got Balance Charge, very nice for Protector at Warjacks. He's got Death March, which is a good spell overall. It's got Lamentation, which is actually quite good. It's a bit of a double-edged sword. It's good because he's on a huge base. It's, his downside as a caster is...
He's on a huge base.
So, yeah, it's... The other downside is that his feat is just shit. Like, there's not much... There's no beating around the bush. It's just shit. It doesn't really do anything, to be honest.
There are going to be matchups where it's they will actually do stuff.
There might be, like, 5% of matchups where it's not completely terrible, but it's just not a good feat. His main draw, other than...
It's RFP on a gun, which you said can be useful.
Yeah.
Can be, but the opponent gets space, right? Like, and you have to get them in your control area, and it's just bad.
That's the funny thing, though. To get the spacing correctly, you actually want people to die from the blast damage, because then they don't get RFP'd.
Yeah,
but you're Resnick, you're too far up at that point anyway. Like, you're gonna get
again. I think it's situational, but it does let you have that RFP aspect.
His other very interesting spell is a Spell Piercer, which means that he has some application in the Protector Mirror if that ever becomes prevalent, because he can let your Judicator shoot their Judicator.
Yes.
And their Judicator cannot shoot you or your Judicator.
Yeah. So, I think, honestly...
Just be careful that the blast damage can still hit you and kill you, but...
To be perfectly honest, I think Resnick 2 is actually probably close to... If I was doing this category, I'd say he'd actually take Kuros 3's place... Except that he's on a huge base.
Oh, if he was not a huge base, he would be
like quite 8. Good. Yeah, like he'd be quite good. But the thing is, right, is he like? There's a lot of casters. Some casters.
He's an early huge base.
Yeah, there's some casters that don't really feel like they pay the tax for being on a huge base and the weaknesses that entails. Like for instance, Scar 3 comes to mind.
Oh God, yes.
McKay as well, but like. He definitely feels like he's paying that price for being on a huge base and being on his pimp chariot. But his bag of tricks is fine. And to be honest, like, I mean, Mon Mychek does have his twin deliverers with Spell Piercer
Sebs. No. We're not going to talk about that list. it's just terrible. Don't play it.
You heard it here. Second or third, probably.
When I say it. Look, it's just bad, okay? Just don't do it. Anyway, if you want to play Resnick 2, he's playable in Exemplar theme, and I think he's playable in Creator's Might. I don't love him in the other two themes. Probably playable in Faithful Masses, not with double deliverers, but he's probably playable. Like, Death March is good on Indrins. Resnick is a very particular pick. You don't put him in your pair because... Oh, well, he's an all-rounder. I'll just play Resnick 2. He's my main caster that I want to drop into 80% of matchup. No, you pick him because he's like a sideboard pick. He's like a very targeted second list.
Yeah.
If you want to do something like shoot your opponent's Judicator to death, you pick him. Like, you've got to have a plan for him.
Yeah,
You can do things which no one else can do, but you have to want him for that reason. You don't just pick him as a generalist.
Yeah, that's... That'd be probably the thing. Like, he also has access to Scourge of Heresy, and Scourge of Heresy is, like, the one Menoth Warjack that actually has threat range randomly.
Fire of Salvation also has threat range.
Now. Yeah, true. Fire of Salvation is also good. And you can run them both in Exemplar.
Yes, that's why I like him in Exemplar.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's a sideboard pick. He's a... If you want him to do something...
He's a good pair.
Yeah,
he's a good second list.
So, we've thrown around the word gear check a bunch of times, but to me, like, Res 2 has a lot of, like, gear check type rules that are quite important. Like, Lamentations of Suffering is the one that comes to mind. It was one of the things we did back in the day was play Resnick 2 with Madeline Corbeau, and in a lot of games you just had an immortal Resnick 2 running around, stomping around like an immortal god on his chariot, and then he ran to that one random guy who had magical guns for some reason... And then he started hiding in the corner on his giant chariot, being like, please don't look at me, please don't look at me, holy shit, oh shit. Resnick 2, as I said, would probably be a much higher tier caster if he wasn't on a battle engine, and that's the unfortunate truth. I still think he's quite strong, but as you said, if you don't have a plan for him, he will probably do still decently well, but then you'll just get those random matchups where you, like, run into Rask, and you're like... I should win this game by all rights, and yet I'm just about to die to a fucking swamp horror unless I hide in the corner with my giant chariot.
Yeah, instead I'll lose on scenario with two units deliverance.
God, you... Jack! Oh my goodness. Sorry, anyone from Poland listening to this. Jack apparently doesn't respect you. Or your life choice.
I do respect the Polish, but I can't just call a spade, you know? If you play terribly on scenario, I'm going to call you out and say you played terribly.
Alright, fine. Jack is
not
going
personal.
All...
If you play well, I'll say, you know, you played that game really well.
Alright, Jack is going full Asian dad on Medoff, which makes sense, actually. Alright, in that case, we shall probably move on to something that causes you less blood pressure loss and more, like, effectively dying of Alzheimer's, and that's Testament of Menoth.
Testament. If Hieroclaimer wasn't good, this guy would be very good.
Fair enough.
He's a revived one. There's not... He doesn't really... He's very one-dimensional. He revives a bunch of the guys you kill every turn. If you don't have enough attacks, he'll just... overwhelm you with shit dudes. Or just dudes.
Boredom, mostly.
Yeah, if you don't have RP, if you don't have a large number of attacks to get through his revive chain, he will just override you and flood the board with whatever he started the game with. His problem right now is, unlike Hieroclaimer, melee RP is good against Testament, because he actually needs all of his guys to be not RP, because he actually wants to bring them all back. Hieroclaimer just needs enough for his feet, and then he can not care about the rest of your RP.
Frankly, and one thing with Hieroclaimer is Hieroclaimer can often have his own guys die through Menoth shenanigans, like damage training from
it.
Bastions, Errant's just self-sacking. So even if you have RP, like, he'll still get some value out of his feat.
Mm. The other problem with Testament is that he has 27 one-track points. I don't know why he has 27 one-track points. Like, there's just no reason.
What, he should have 32? Like
No, I don't think Hieroclaimer should have 32. I think they should both have 30. I don't know why he has 0.7 and Hieroclaimer's 30. It just makes no sense. Anyway, that's just a pet peeve.
So, it's really hard sometimes to understand why they choose warjack points the way they do, honestly.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you understand.
Yeah, no, sometimes it's very obvious, and other times it's just like, it just seems like they rolled a dice.
Yeah, like, why does certain costs so,
it's like, we start at 20 and we roll a d8.
Testament is just a boring caster. He's got a crappy feat. It's a good revive caster, and he's really got two spells. He's got Cloak of Ash, which is okay, and he's got Raise Dead. And that's it.
Yep.
Well, not much more to say. If you play him, you can play him in any...
play him in Exemplar. Exemplar have the best trash to revive.
Yes, I think Exemplar is the best option, because they have access to good cav, cheap weapon masters, basically what you're looking for. It's probably fine in Guardians of the Temple. You can res the Daughter Cav, but...
End of the day, Exemplar have, like, Cav you can revive, Bastions or Cinerators you can revive, Knights Exemplar, frankly, you could revive.
He's also a little bit superseded by the Church.
Yeah.
So, not too much to say about him other than that. He's okay. Oh, let's move on to Vindictus. I do have a bit to say about Vindictus, actually.
Fair enough, then.
That's because Vindy's a weird guy.
Back in the day, I hated Vindictus, because he didn't have a damage buff, didn't have a mat buff. His personal threat is the worst. His personal output is actually the worst in the entire faction. Okay? When I say that, you probably think, oh, surely not, and then you go look through all the casters. Go look through all the casts. It is actually the worst in the entire faction. Sev 1 has better output.
How? Oh, right, Hand of Fate. Oh, sorry, Eye of Menoth.
Yes, he has Eye of Menoth. Like, it's just embarrassing. Like, how is he this Undertaker or whatever he is with two named weapons? That both his weapons have a name, and yet they're just so shit. And he's Mat 6. Like...
They're not good names, by the way. That's probably why.
Yeah, they're amazing names. They should probably be like Power 15 Weapon Masters or something. But instead they're Power 12, and he's Mat 6.
Like, nah, they have the best rule. They have Death Toll.
Yeah, you can make Zillas.
Yeah, I remember. But to be fair, in Mark 2, Death Toll was a lot better. You could turn, like...
a Mammoth into a Zealot.
That's right. Now it has to be a warrior model.
So
now it's limited to trees and rocks. Yeah. Oh, no, say trees, because it has to be living. Right. Yep.
You can't take zealots in his list.
It clearly needs to go through CID and have that ability added to him. You ever think about that?
It should just be Death Toll, warrior model.
Uh-huh.
That would be interesting, actually.
I mean, that just means that cavalry are coming back into the game.
Sure, but it wouldn't even be good. Like, you don't attack Vindictus and kill it and not die. It's just not going to happen. Yeah. Anyway, so, okay, Vindictus. I used to think it was bad. And then Exemplar Interdiction came out, and I was like, wow, this guy's probably one of the best EI casters. So I put him on the table a couple of times, and it sucked. Like, it should have been good, but just, it wasn't. And I kind of understand why, but I still don't know if it's my user error on the table, or if I'm just missing something. So, he has a good threat extender, he's got good defensive buff, he's got what looks like a good feat, but it's not really a good feat. He's got some niche abilities, which I'll talk about in a sec. But it's just not that good. Like, he doesn't solve any issues, because he doesn't have any map buff or damage buff. So, yeah, he can get a bunch of your army there, but if they position well enough, the stuff that you get to punch isn't what you want to punch, and might not be what you can kill when you punch. And he can't really fix that. He just has to punch whatever's in front of him, which is kind of a problem. And as I already said, his stat line is shit. Basically, his feet. I think it's just his feet that's the problem. His feet is not as good as it either needs to be or looks to be.
Well, I think... So there's a lot of random workarounds around Vindictus's, like, bag of tricks. Like, for instance, his feet doesn't work on Warjacks, which means that doesn't work on sprays. Because if you target a spray at the Warjacks, you can light it up and still spray to death his infantry right in front of him.
Yeah, all your own models to spray.
Yeah, exactly. You can just spray your own guys. Not being targeted by charges, slams, or spells. Like, the spells is probably the worst one there. But even then, you can just, you know, wait a turn, because that is a thing you can do.
And you can tension with his feet, because you can't be targeted by charges. So you want to be as far up as possible, right?
Yeah.
To kill them the next turn. But then they can walk up and punch you, and you're like, well, what's the point of that? Or you stay back, and then you're not in range the next turn, you're like, well, shit, why did I even bother?
I mean, he has a problem similar to Rask's feet, in that you kind of have to pop it before you want to. You'll never pop it under ideal circumstances.
Yes.
But it's got more random outs to it than Rask's feet does.
Yes, correct. Yes. Rask doesn't give a shit if you're magical or not. If you're not within five, you ain't doing shit to him with your gun. Yeah, so.
Plus, it's one of those feats where if they have some outs, then they actually have, like, you have to play around those models that have the outs, which means your feat is just less good in general. Like.
Yeah. So, one other thing that is interesting, that courtesy of Colin Hill, our resident genius.
Jank expert. Jank consultant. Jank expert,
if you want to call it that. If you are having problems with Retribution, he suggested you take Vindictus with a Judicator and put Penitence. Is it Penitence?
It's Penitence.
Penitence on your Judicator. Then their strike force are going to be like, do I kill myself or not?
Well, that brings up a good point, which is I said that there's a lot of random outs to Vindictus's toolkit. Well, Penitence is like another one of those spells with random outs. Like, Sea Rats will only kill the guy leading the attack, and two-man Sea Rats are about, on a lot of cases, about roughly equal to just doing the singular shots, and in some cases just better. So you kind of accidentally force your opponent to play correctly in this particular case.
And Warjacks don't care either.
Also, by the way, like, he doesn't have enough focus to put out all of his buffs turn one, so he has to take, like, a Hierophant. A Hierophant is, how should I say, his support model.
That doesn't theft. Do any
work. He's theft. Don't want support that guy.
Theft.
Yeah. And it's just like, what is the Hierophant doing apart from getting all your upkeeps out turn one? Like, what are you going to do, cast Immolation at them?
It's actually worse than that, because he wants the true path as well. And if he wants to cast all his spells in true path, that's 11 focus, by the way.
Yeah, not happening.
Yeah, not happening. And even if you don't cast true path, the Hierophant doesn't let you cast your spell. You need your Hierophant and Arrak.
Amusingly, actually, I think he'd be fine if he was 30 Warjack points instead of 29, because then he could throw in Sev Zero and do the whole package we just talked about with Hierochlamer.
Sure.
And then you'd have your, damn it, you'd be able to have your cake and eat it too.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love 30 Warjack points on all my Warcasters, Chris, but, you know, can't have it.
Sure.
Anyway, Vindictus, not as good as he looks on paper, but gives you a bit of a ghetto answer to Retribution. You might want to try that. So,
I mean, that said and all, like, you know, not everyone is going to be running, say, a train with, like, basically is able to get through Divine Protection. There are going to be lists that you'll be working well against, but I guess that is one of his problems, is, like, if Vindictus's kit doesn't work against you for whatever reason, then he's in for a really bad time.
Yes, a bit of a house of cards.
But, on the other hand, you could, like, to be honest, just taking over for a bit of, like, what fat lists to run this guy. And, like, you could just run him in Guardians of the Temple with all the fucking Temple Flame Guard, because you're running garbage anyway, right? You might as well make that garbage basically, you know, unchargeable, you know, punches.
You know what the problem with that is?
Yeah.
You have a bunch of pound tens that can't kill anything.
Correct, but, you know, you're going for a scenario anyway. Jam it up with your garbage. It's fine. It's fine.
So on that note, that marks the end of our second category. Now, unfortunately, we do have some casters in the last category. And I apologize in advance if you like any of these casters. It's just my opinion on those casters that they're not, well, competitive enough to be played right now. Not saying you can't win games, I just don't think they're good. So, Sev won. So, in a nutshell, I'm not really going to give you lists for these casters because, as I said, I don't think they're competitive, so I don't really have a list for you, otherwise they wouldn't be here. Sev1, his main problem is Sev0. So,
yes.
Why would I play Sev1 when I can put Sev0 on my list to give Sev1, to give me the effect of playing Sev1 plus my actual caster? That's it. That's like, there's not much else to say. If I could stack Eye of Menoth from Sev1 with Eye of Menoth from Sev0, it would be pretty good. But I can't. So, he's worse than my junior Warcaster.
I mean, the funny thing is, he's also in a lot of ways less survivable than Sev0
is. He is. He's slower, has worse defense, worse armor, and barely has more focus.
Yep.
I mean, yes.
It's pretty bad. It's not good.
That's all I got for Sev1. He's got some cool stuff, but really, he's out here for Eye of Menoth. And you can get that from a junior Warcaster.
The main problem is, he actually pays for having Eye of Menoth by having, like, feet and, like, you know, basically, and it's still quite anemic, like, personal output. I mean, he's got ashes and some stuff, but, you know, he actually pays for having Eye of Menoth, which could just take Sev0 instead and not pay for it.
You could not pay for Eye of Menoth by taking free Sev0 in your other caster.
Oh, dear.
Anyway, so, let's talk about Resnik 1 next. I think Resnik 1 might actually be playable now. I'm not sure. I put him here because I haven't tried him. Before, I used to think that Hand of Destruction or Hand of something? Whatever his buff is, like if you boost attack rolls, what's it called?
Oh, Engine of Destruction.
No.
The other one.
Hand of Destruction, I believe.
No, he has Engine of Destruction.
No.
Brand of Heresy.
I know he has
Brand
of Destruction.
Yeah, Brand
of Heresy. That's the one.
Yeah.
So before Brand of Heresy, and I was brainstorming back in the beginning of Mark 3 about Resnik 1, I'm like, okay, what does this guy do? The first thing he does, and the obvious thing is, he has Scourge of Heresy and Petition, so if all conditions are met, he casts Petition, removes Scourge of Heresy, kills something, removes Scourge of Heresy, go a million inches and kill the caster, hopefully. Alright, that's plan A. That's like one trick pony. What else does he do? Well, he has Ignite. Yeah, it's okay. Hex Blast. Not great unless you have an Arc Node. Engine Destruction is kind of cute for late game. And then Brand of Heresy is the interesting spell. So it gives Warjax in his battle with boosted attack and damage rolls against the target that you debuff. Now, I was trying to work out, because think about it, if you have a Reckoner or any Warjack with a gun, casting Brand of Heresy is a net loss of focus. Because you could have given it a focus to boost to hit boost damage, right? Instead, you spent 3 and a boost to cast hit Brand of Heresy. That's terrible. So, you need to find some way to make it focus efficient enough to justify casting it and, you know, make you actually attractive to cast. Let's say you're running 2 Reckoners, it's still net negative. If you run 3 Reckoners, it's still a net loss of focus to cast this spell. So then I was like, oh, you know what? The only way I can think of to make this worth doing is if I play Redeemers, or at least one Redeemer. Because if I have a Redeemer, I get how many boosts? Boost hit, boost damage, boost hit, boost damage, boost hit, and plus a free focus. So I've got 5 focus out of Brand of Heresy, which cost me 4 to cast. So at this point, it's still not great, because I'm getting 1 free focus. It's not really worth doing. But if I have a Redeemer plus some other stuff, like a Reckoner and maybe two Reckoners and Redeemer, suddenly I'm getting decent focus efficiency, you know? Now, then I forgot about Resdick 1 for like a long time. But now I was thinking, you know what else wants Reign of Heresy? The Judicator.
Yeah, funny that.
Funny that. So if you line up all your guns on the Judicator and you Brand of Heresy, that's actually not bad. Especially if your blast damage goes and hits it as well.
Yeah, that's
at that point, you're just printing, right? Because you've got like a Thor Earthbreaker worth of focus that you got out of it.
You got a Thor Hand of Fated, probably Eye of Menoth Earthbreaker.
Yeah, so if you run, then you can go crazy. You can run a Judicator or two Judicators, or Judicator Redeemer. Suddenly, you're getting, like, focus on the wazoo out of this spell. Now, we come back to the... I haven't played this yet, but we have still a problem of Protectorate Arknode.
Yes. I think that sums up his main problem is legitimately, like, he relies on Protectorate Arknodes, which are, like... they exist in the game. That's good.
If Protectorate had a good Arknode, I think this guy would be quite good. I think he's a little bit awkward, but he needs some testing, and he might be... playable. So, yeah, that was a bit too much to say about Resnick 1, to be honest, but I just thought I'd put it out there that there's something interesting going on.
I'll put it this way, I think this guy is better than, say, Malakas, so I'd have him in the B category,
sure.
I mean...
Alright, let's talk about Tristan 1.
I actually do not remember what Tristan 1 or Tristan
2? Trusite.
Tristan the Warcaster.
Tristan the Warcaster. Here we go.
Two found words to say about Tristan. Shit, Amon. Alright, moving on.
Moving on then.
Yeah, that's all right.
It basically is. He's got, instead of Synergy, he's got what's called Manifest Destiny. And he's got some janky other abilities. He's got a janky feat, some janky spells, and a terrible stat line. And when I say terrible, I know Amon has a terrible stat line, but Tristan has an even more terrible stat line. So... it's not where you want to be. Just play Amon if you want War Jacks. Well, you don't want War Jacks.
So he has Hand of the Creator, right? Which is like his big trick, and that's...
you know, Hand of the Creator, right?
Okay.
Psychosurgery.
Yeah. It's just like, I mean,
I understand it heals medium bases, in theory, but it's pretty much psychosurgery.
Well, I could tell you, like, even if I had access to this guy in, like, say, Manowar theme, or frankly... You wouldn't play it, right? Like, it would just be... because that's not how medium bases work. Like, repairing medium bases is kind of chump change, right? Yeah.
It's the theme benefit in Armored Core. You're just like, oh, yeah, okay, I guess that exists.
I mean, legitimately speaking, I'd say that and all, but the only theme I'd consider running, like, as some spell like Hand of Creator and benefiting that is probably, say, Blind Water, where your game plan is Masked Gators.
Sure, but you know what doesn't work on medium-based infantry?
Everything else. Manifest Destiny, involved, like, well...
His whole kit is confused.
Yes.
Because he also gives True Sight, but his attack and damage buff is only on melee, so it's just like, I guess I can see through clouds?
In addition, adjudicate, like, for instance, he also has to be seen through the lens of, like, adjudicator, and it's a case of, well, adjudicator isn't kind of what you want anyway, because, I mean, the only spell that really synergizes with Inviolable Resolve. And guess what? You don't need True Sight on adjudicator. It has sprays.
You know what else? You can take adjudicator and feed for one focus. Good job.
Nice. Alright, enough about Tristan.
Alright, let's go to the sad ending of this faction.
I mean, you can end it on a happy note if you talk about the one caster you haven't actually talked about, which is Vlad. But that's okay, we'll talk about your unrequited love.
You're a 1, 2, and 3. I'm going to talk about these together, I'm sorry.
Fair enough.
They're not functional. I mean, if you're a 1, tries to be a frontline bully that can clear infantry, but you know what? Fire can go out, so it's not reliable.
Fire just isn't as good as it used to be either. Like, you can feat to set the opponent's warcaster on fire, and before that could actually be a death sentence.
I almost won on a fire roll the other day.
Yeah, but guess what? Did you only set them on fire, or did you attack them as well?
Oh, I kind of just accidentally set them on fire and almost killed them.
Fair enough, then.
But, yeah, she just doesn't work. Engine of Destruction on her is nice, but does get her to a level where she can reliably kill anything, to be honest. Like, she can't kill a tanky warcaster, she can't kill a colossal, like, it's just not good.
Is there anyone who has Engine of Destruction that makes them, like, a legitimate concern?
Yeah, Locke.
No,
personally, he means.
It's good on her battle group, but not on her.
Yeah, it's good on her battle group.
I mean, Yeah,
it sucks on her. It's like, that's the worst way to use it.
Hmm.
So the answer is no. So if you're a one, sorry, just not functional. If you're a two, only has one spell, so not functional. She has escort, and that's about it. So.
But isn't she like going to be your answer for? Who's the one that makes your stuff immunifier? Is that three?
Makes her stuff immunifier. No one makes my stuff immunifier. What?
Oh, never mind. It's all garbage. Never mind. Ignore me.
Fiora 3, the most functional out of the three Fioras, but is an inside caster, so still not functional. Go see discussions about Makeda 3 if you want.
I was actually going to say, Makeda 2 had Engine of Destruction, and she used that from time to time, but she no longer has that. She instead decided to get a much better spell called Storm Rager.
Yeah, that seems much better.
Yeah, like, I think Fiora 3 is the best out of all of these, but yeah.
She is. Inside is a good spell. You can always use it to kill some shit before you die. So, I mean, at least you got that going for you. She's fast. She's on a horse. You know, she's got a spray. She's got a red line, which is very good. Insight is very good, but you always die the turn after, so it's good for one turn.
You better win.
And that's about it. She has... If she had, like, something instead of Banishing Ward, like a real spell, like a defensive spell, she would be good. If they gave her a Defender's Ward instead of that, I would play the shit out of her. But
so would that make her a B-tier?
Top of the B-tier, for sure, at least.
Oh, maybe, really?
Right, no.
Maybe A-tier, if she had D-Ward instead of...
For the listeners not aware, Jack really has a love-hate, abusive relationship with Fiora, and he's the one getting abused.
I like Fiora, but I can't play a non-functional caster. I'm sorry. I really want to, and I've tried, alright? It's not like I haven't tried. It's
It's the labor of love.
I've seen the model. He owns it and played with it.
Got to pay as well, I'm pretty sure.
So that wraps up all the time. It's a pretty deep stable. They've got, eight?
No, there's the Vlad.
No, there's an honorable mention.
Oh, yeah?
The true war caster. Sub-Zero.
Yes, Sub-Zero. Let's talk about Sub-Zero and what he does.
He is in the top category, right below Harvey and HR.
It is telling that Severius Zero as a solo may be better than several of the casters we just talked about.
More than several, are you kidding me?
God, he is an actual warcaster. He has 5 focus.
Yep.
He has the same amount of focus as Haraclaimer.
Yep.
And he gets to be in a list with other warcasters.
So Severius Zero...
For free,
yes. Severius Zero to me is actually kind of a failing of CID, because I don't think he was ever correctly tested for the simple fact that he...
As opposed to Sorcha Zero giving boundless charge to all your
warriors. We're not going to talk about bad factions.
We're not going to talk about that one. All right.
I mean, I will admit, the main reason why is that Sev Zero is a model that you can take an Exemplar theme, and he never was actually tested with Exemplar theme CID. Properly, like he was out of scope for that one, and that was a problem because it's led to a bunch of unforeseen shit from a beta testing standpoint. Like they didn't really, you wouldn't really test out a Judicator with Sev Zero because the Judicator's buffs came in the last week, and Sev Zero, I don't believe, was either Sev Zero was basically right after Exemplar CID or significantly beforehand, and was basically out of scope for discussion.
That's fine. It's not a broken model, whatever.
Right.
He's not. He's fine. He's really good, though.
Yes, he is very good. The big thing that I'd say to watch out for is, like, Sub-Zero existing... Okay, cool, whatever. Like, Sub-Zero existing and making actual good use out of Road to War, that's where he starts getting quite dangerous, because then he's not just... If he actually has to pay for a Warjack, and that Warjack has to exist and, like, basically do nothing, then he's not a great model, but... When that Warjack is basically getting Road to Ward and making attacks and doing damage, like, as we said, the most dangerous model on a lot of High Reclaimer lists is, like, fucking Sub-Zero's Warjack, because it's this random flex piece that you have no compunction against throwing away, and will do a shit ton of damage.
So, yes, Sub-Zero is also surprisingly hard to kill.
Mm-hmm, he is. And... I mean, even ignoring ways to make him literally unkillable, like, say, Harvey, it's just difficult to get to him. He doesn't actually need to be anywhere near a lot of models.
Sometimes he can be up front as well, but then you have to put so much into killing him and you might fail anyway. Trust me, he's lived a lot longer than...
And he can, what, camp 4?
Yep.
You can camp as much as you want. What?
Like, well, you upkeep Road to War and you just camp the rest.
Well, it's also like, a lot of the time, some factions, their way of dealing with models like that is by spells, but he's got Mystic Wards.
Like, no, sir. It's not going to happen.
Yeah. Mystic Wards camp too, and you're like, oh my god.
So, one thing I will note that's kind of cute. If you put Fire of Salvation on Sev, zero. That thing goes a long way. Just so you know. Just be
careful. Fire of Salvation. Yes.
Yeah. Especially if your cast has like a Warjack speed buff, whether it's a sail or
Boundless Charge or something.
Boundless Charge, Crusader's Call. That's,
Redline. Redline?
Yeah, 17 inches, just in case you were wondering.
Yep.
If you proc it, so. Yeah, that's it for all the warcasters. We've got some hot takes before we wrap this up.
I think we should probably talk a bit about Exemplar Interdiction, some of the models in it before. Okay. And the hot takes, honestly, they're probably you're the ones to make, and then we'll be the ones to scoff at. But
sure. I've got some models that I hate that other people might like.
Deliverers. All right.
No, I'm not even going to go there. Well, I've already been there in this cast. I don't need to talk about deliverers anymore.
Fair enough, then. Okay.
So, Exemplar Interdiction. Well, all the models in it are pretty good.
Yep, pretty much. The big thing is that both of the medium bases are now good. Yes, believe it or not, here's a hot take. Bastions are really fucking stupid.
I don't know if they're stupid. They're not as bad as everyone thinks they are, but they're also not as good as Chris thinks they are. So
probably.
They're decent.
I will say, they are a lot more, they're a bit binary. Like, if they are allowed to exist in their native environment, they are quite fucking dangerous. I will say, they're a lot harder to shoot off the table than, you know, everyone says they are, because you're a smart guy, presumably, and you space accordingly. And more importantly, you know that they're going to get shot off the table, so just fucking position around that. Also, it's Menoth. You can probably figure out a way to deliver them, I'm sure.
They're immune to vengeance.
Yes.
Irritating as fuck.
The big one to me is that they, of all the Exemplar, they benefit the most from Sev Zero because they get it on their defensive strike, and the way you generally position Bastions means that they're always going to be in range of Sev Zero. Half the time, they will be protecting Sev Zero or his Adjudicator or his random Druk. Like, playing them with Harby is a new era of gross. Playing them with Testament is quite value for money. You can revive them and you'll still get work out of them because they'll still have defensive strike. And it's a rule that a lot of people will randomly forget. They're very good at bullying models with 1-inch melee range. Like, say, a lot of, like, Osram lists, for instance, that are spamming heavies. They have a hard time engaging Bastions effectively because they can get in range of 1 or 2. They'll cop some defensive strikes and then the next turn the Bastions will charge the heavies, stay at 2-inch melee range, and keep up the pressure. Yeah, that's pretty much my piece on Bastions.
Mm-hmm, fair enough.
Let me see. Incinerators are Manowar Shock Troopers that very much do the same thing. They have takedown instead of the no pushing and stuff, which means they randomly answer some stuff. They're only power 11 weapon masters, which means they're, again, the same hitting power as Shock Troopers, effectively. Not much for me to say. I will say in general, like, the Exemplar theme is just quite scary in terms of its amount of weapon masters, but it's the Adjudicator which I think has actually pushed it into the top tier.
The fact the thing gets fucking blessed from a theme with a bunch of fucking knights in it is retarded.
Yeah.
What do you mean? It's thematic. The knights are blessed, therefore the Warjack thinks the same way. I mean, he's also blessed.
Sure, on their melee weapons.
Errants are blessed on the ranged weapons. Oh,
God damn it. Why?
Well,
he's like, I'm a giant errant.
Yeah.
Fuck him.
Fuck that guy.
Fuck the Adjudicator.
But yeah, like...
Rolling so much dice, and then just being blessed, you ignore all of whatever armor you fucking actually place on you. It's just dumb. It's just dumb, Jack.
Listeners have probably figured out that we've been fucking well over this shit for a long time.
I want to just run round like 30 box models with like just Adjudicator's rockets. It's so fucking dumb.
I mean, that was a chariot, right?
But that was 28 boxes.
Yeah, it's only 28. I mean, I did 38 to it, but it was...
I mean, if it was a warjack, like an armor 19 warjack, then you would have just done 38 wounds to it.
Yeah, it would have been dead. But, you know.
These things happen.
No, it doesn't.
Well, these things now happen. Jack, what do you think of the shrine? Because you've mentioned it a couple of times, and to be honest, pre-WTC testing, I was quite impressed with this thing, but I've noticed
it... is good, but it's an interesting piece. I think you ideally need to run it with a caster that runs errands quite well, and in my opinion, those are casters either with Defender's Ward or Inviolable Resolve, and I think the best two to run it are Serenia and Krios 2.
Yeah, I could agree on that.
So, if you want to test the shrine, I think it's at its best with those two casters. Not to say it's not playable with anyone else, it is, but, you know, those are would be my first two picks.
I would say one thing with the shrine is that I also find it's quite good on incinerators, because you can return the incinerators to the unit, and then they get vengeance attacks. It's kind of
similar. But the other is a double-edged sword, because they don't usually bother killing your incinerators.
Yes.
Because the shrine's there, so, yeah, that's the problem.
Agreed. It's good if you've got an army of medium bases, but as you said, there's some problems with that, I would suspect. Honestly, there's not much to say. We've kind of covered the exemplar theme now that I think about it with our round tree of the casters. There's a lot of different ways to play the Knight's Exemplar theme, and it's usually based on the war caster, just what flavor of abuse you go for. Yes. So in that case, Jack, what are your hot takes? Some of the hot takes.
I've got most overrated model and most underrated model.
Alright then.
So the most underrated model I think is the Purifier right now. I haven't seen anyone play it, but I think it's quite good. Its only problem, right, is the Dervish is 7 points.
Yes.
That is its only problem. If the Dervish didn't exist, this would be just everywhere.
I mean, if the Dervish didn't exist, this would be Sev Zero's Warjack instead, because it does very much the same thing.
It was in consideration, but obviously not quite as good. The Purifier is really good. It's got great stats. Defensively, it's very good. It's got some nice...
it's got chain weapon. It's just got a lot of vanity rules. Yeah, like overtake, chain weapon,
flame trail, ashen veil. It's just got a bunch of stuff. Continuous fire on the weapon. None of it's all good. It's not all going to come into effect, but something is going to be relevant, basically.
It reminds me of a Crucible Guard Lightjack, where it just has all the rules and all the good stats, and you're just like, good about spending points.
I mean, his Purifier has a slot because of, like, Sev Zero, I find. Maybe you put a couple of random Purifiers in with, like, your Amon list, because it does... With Overtake, it means that it gets more than just its initials and then ends up in a spot.
I still think the Dervish is... Probably, but even though
you can spam more of them, but I mean, let's put it this way: I reckon the Purifier will probably get taken a lot when you've got one random point. You're like, I guess I'll swap a Dervish for a Purifier for something a little different.
Yeah. You've only got a rack or a mechanic, then I agree with that.
And it's half most overrated model.
Overrated model, the Vigilant. It's fucking terrible. Please don't play it.
I've never seen one on the table.
What the hell kind of hot take is that? The Vigilant is garbage.
Yes, but do you know how many people talk about putting in a list? Every time I see a list with a visual in it, I want to, like... Don't worry.
Listeners, you don't want to know.
Yeah.
Look. In the words, I'm going to channel some Chris here. If you need a Vigilant to keep your caster alive, learn to play better.
Okay.
Right? I never said that specifically about Vigilance, but I will agree.
I think he's just channeling the way you speak.
Yes.
Get good, as he would say.
Get good. Don't be bad.
You don't need 9 points to keep your caster alive. Just play better, position better, then put a real model in your army that does something, because it is absolutely awful.
I mean, I'll be honest, right? If you want to actually keep your caster alive, just take the model that properly keeps your caster alive, the Devout. It's not even that much worse in terms of armor value, and it has defensive strike.
I actually dislike the Devout too. I can understand it has a role.
Yes. It's also the same price as a Vigilant.
Yes. And, yeah, the Vigilant, it's just not good.
I will
say... You know what has girded? Champions of the Order of the Wall. And it gives girded to all your paladins.
I mean,
so you're desperate.
Hey, Jack. Did you ever think what happens if you want girded in your flame guard theme? Did you ever think about that?
You know what Vigilants need to do? Look at a tanker.
Yeah, they need to put guns on their shields. That would be nice. Fuck, they actually have less power than a tanker does. How is that possible?
Because it's atrocious. What do you mean, how is it possible?
It's got the same... It has better defense, I guess. It's more dodgy, so it has less arm... So it has less punch. I don't know where this is going.
Where this is going,
yeah,
is...
Yeah, we'll go with that, Brian. We'll go with that. It's more ninja-like.
Lovely. I will say, in general, Menoth is a bit of a support faction, I find, from time to time, especially...
No, it's not.
Well, that's the thing is...
Don't make the mistake of putting those support models on your list.
Generally speaking, we here at Dark Guidance believe that support is, generally speaking, a waste of your time.
Unless it does work.
Unless it does work. And to be fair, this is more of like a sentiment of just like, in general, actually consider the support models, see if they're relevant or not. Like, for instance, Sub-Zero, probably a good support model. Vassal of Menoth, probably not a support model worth considering.
Not anymore.
Not anymore.
Yeah, because back in the day, it had ancillary attack. That means your support model gets to make an attack with your Warjack. Now, it doesn't do that. It has magic ability 6, power 11, rubbish.
That's why Kador and Crucible have such good support models, because, like, support models in Crucible Guard are Dragon Breath rockets, and you're just like,
That's
not a support model, okay.
Sure it is. How else do you apply your armor debuff to living models?
You didn't
debuff anything. Hey, you didn't kill the primary target, which was their Colossal, Gargantuan. You just killed the guy in front of the Gargantuan that you shot in the face with your rocket.
You shoot a Gargantuan, it's still has 16.
Oh, yeah, true.
As I said, you've killed it.
Yeah, because you're supporting the rest of your army, Jack. Yeah.
Yes, I agree. I believe in that way of supporting, too, by killing the enemy models.
Yeah, but they also make it easier to do it.
Listeners probably don't know this, but Jack is the primary proponent of this, like, whole, like, support is just cut rid of, get rid of all of it. So it's always funny to see him in Menoth.
That's actually... why he doesn't like Lucas, because Lucas is like, I need the support to live. No Medicare for Jack.
No. I just said, just cut all of it and then play a 3-turn game.
Easy.
You think I'm joking? I wasn't joking.
You're anyway, basically playing red deck wins at that point, I'm pretty sure.
This, I think that's a good way to wrap it up. Is there anything else?
I think we've covered the bullshit and the garbage.
Yeah, if you have any questions, feel free to email What's Down Under.
Actually, we have a new email address. It's darkguidancegaming@gmail.com. That's darkguidancegaming@gmail.com. You can also reach us on Facebook. We have a page there. You can contact or message us or comment.
Let us know if you have any hate mail or lists or questions, feel free to shoot a message.
Yeah, indeed. If you want to hate on Jack and his particular weird ideas, like...
Don't worry, we'll be spamming this all over the Menoth Facebook
That's
page.
That's fine, please send it through. It will not offend me.
His hatred of... like, his unnatural hatred of Fiora and all things fun.
No, he doesn't hate Fiora. He loves Fiora. He wants Fiora to be good. That's why he's so ashamed.
Yeah, indeed. He loves to hate
He's Fiora. Like, he has to put the paper bag over and then pretend it's somebody else, like Harvey.
Draws like a
I have done that.
Oh, that's right. I have seen him play Harvey games with a Fiora 3 model.
Yeah.
Multiple times.
Anyway, that's it for Dark Guidance this week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you all. Good night. Oh, good cast.